This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
A most excellent day to you whenever it is you are listening to this internet broadcast of Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. Have an awesome show coming up for you because we have the Xbox One to talk about. That would now be the X1 if you are forum abbreviating, I suppose.
I'll actually be calling it the X-Bone.
Ah, yes. So the X-Bone, yes.
That's I know that's not mine. I know some people jumped on it already, but... it's clever.
And that would be Indie Jeff Mattis here on the big show today.
Hey, everybody. Great to be here.
As well as Christian Spicer at the far end of the table.
And I will be calling it what Microsoft calls it on the console itself, the Xbox. Like, there's no Xbox One. The only place Xbox One exists was on a slide that they showed at their press conference.
Well, there's plenty of place on that box to add extra things later. So you can add your own one airbrushed wherever you'd like to. Okay?
The first thing that I tweeted when I saw it was, damn, that bitch is huge.
That's what she said.
Yes.
Wait, that's less than a minute and we already got our first one in. That's excellent.
That is most excellent.
Andrea Renee here from The Escapist, folks.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me back.
And we're already sick of each other because we did the bonus round this morning, so...
we're not sick of each other. Maybe you're just sick of me. Don't answer that.
She just served him up on a plate today. All right, we will waste no time because, you know, there's lots to talk about here, like television and television, TV, television.
And services.
TV, television, sports, television, Call of Duty. And if you haven't seen that video on YouTube, you are missing out. You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
It's amazing. Some enterprising video editor took the 1 hour of video footage and edited it down to that. It is literally just all the people and mentions of TV, television, sports, television, sports. It really helps.
It makes me want to hit myself in the head with a brick.
It does. Well, watching it will as well. And it's sort of, although it's done in humor, it does point out how well planned that attack was and that was the core message here, which we can leave open for discussion. So we're going to tackle this thing in the order that Microsoft presented it because that's the easiest way to come at the animal. So first of all, there's the hardware. You guys know all about it now, of course, because they gave all the tech specs and explained all the details in and out of the hardware, right? You thought that was satisfactory.
Yeah, I mean, the guts are...
Dude, I was like, I hope someone took a photo of that slide because they glossed over those tech specs so fast.
We know it has 8 gigs of RAM, and we know it has a 500 gigabyte hard... I think that's all I remember from the... and the cloud is unlimited.
It has 8-core GPU, right?
8-core. Well, so both this and the PlayStation 4 are on very similar architecture, and they're called system on a chip. And the idea is that everything that used to be split across multiple pieces of wafers of silicon is now on one. So system on a chip. This one, and both of them are using AMD.
AMD, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually two quadruple cores, and they're also using the same GPU architecture, though, as is, yeah, you're fine. Your cocktail's clinking. We get it. You're like, I'm going to hold my cocktail. They won't hear the ice over here.
I realized the ice was clinking right into the microphone.
And if you want to, by the way, if you want to get into a more detailed look at the hardware specs, I highly recommend Anandtech. That's ANANDTECH.com. Anand has been around since time immemorial. I remember reading...
I can't even remember how long they've been around.
Yeah, I remember reading his stuff. You know, and I've always liked him a little bit over Tom's Hardware. I'm sure Tom's Hardware has their stuff up as well. But anyway, they did a great detailed explanation of this because there were, in the Wired exposés, some shots of the motherboard where they were actually able to look at the chipsets and read the numbers off of them and go, oh, we know what that is now. We know what that is now. And so we can get into this more detail. But basically, they're both using the same architecture. The difference being this. the PlayStation 4 approach is a little more brute force. It's apparently on the order of 33 or a third more powerful because the GPU has more paths in it. So imagine if you've got like a bunch, and I'm simplifying things dramatically, so don't take me to school on it because, you know, we're doing Weekend Confirmed, we're not doing an Antec. We want to get into it's like 760, anyway, it's like all factors of eight. 768 for the Xbox and 1,000, probably 1,024, anyway, for the PlayStation 4. So this gives it a considerably higher number of computations that the graphics processing unit on the PlayStation 4 can do.
Correct.
The only counter that Microsoft has is that they went back to their embedded RAM on the chip, which could be, as Anand points out, a actually pretty cool setup for them because this embedded memory on the chip allows them to do some really fast page buffering stuff, and I'm going to stop the text talk there because it gets really boring. But basically, it means that while the central processor is doing, while it's doing different instruction sets for the program, it's able to store things really close by and use them very, very quickly if they're being used in repeated times.
Right, which is cool. I mean, we saw that in action to a certain degree.
It's also more complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bottom line of all this stuff is, the only place you're going to see either of these systems at their best will be on their exclusives. Because now that they are roughly one-to-one architectures, unfortunately for Sony, the lower common denominator of the Xbox One is probably going to be the standard for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. And I think that anyone who's tremendously upset about that today should just stop for a moment, because both of these systems are able to do some pretty impressive visuals on the screen.
Now, do you think there's the possibility that we'll start to see more PC lead platform stuff? Because, you know, I know in the, like, especially over the past 5 years or so, it's really seemed like, you know, yes, you get occasional titles that really, really try to go after PC first and harness that extra stuff. But more often than not, you end up with titles that are like, hey, this looks good on 360 or PS3, and the PC version looks sharper, has a couple extra little things, little physics effects or whatever. But you know,
I really am at a complete loss as to the future of PC gaming because of number one, I was totally wrong about the operating system of this device. I mean, there's a number of things I was incorrect about on the Xbox One and that are frustrating to me because I think they were bad moves. Mm-hmm. But one of them is that it's not a Windows 8 device.
Right.
Matter of fact, it's running three OSs. Brilliant. That nothing will go wrong with that. Let's run three operating systems. We can blue screen one. We can blue screen three.
We'll be patching this thing like every 2 hours. It'll be great.
Yeah. And I mean, and actually, if you break it down from a tech standpoint, it sort of makes sense. They have one that is responsible for running all of the whiz bang UI stuff that you saw. One that's responsible for the like actual talking to the hardware and running games.
Right.
And one that negotiates conversations between the two. Okay, I get the way it works.
I don't know what you want me to do right now. I'm trying to do the whiz bang stuff, but I want you to play some games.
And it's just this guy negotiating the whole time.
Yeah. He's not quite that whiny. He's actually a little firmer about it. He's like, hey, shut up. We are playing games right now, all right? You shut up right now, all right?
You
shut up.
DV.
Which isn't technically negotiating, but
yeah, he just tells what's going on.
It's Jack Reacher negotiating.
That's right.
Yeah,
so
I think we have yet to see though what exactly this tech can really do because we haven't seen it in action.
I agree. Let's answer his question about PC because the rest of the story there was I don't know how much attention it got, but I know that we had a story on Shack News about this that Microsoft downplayed the future of PC traditional PC gaming on Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
So where does PC, you asked, are we going to see PC as a lead platform? Well, what if the platform holder, which would be the operating system, is essentially saying we're not even bothering with games because we're doing in different directions? Like, what happens?
I think Valve's aware of that, and that's why they're leaning towards Linux more and more.
Yeah.
And they're transitioning all of their games to being fully Linux based. They're the Piston or the, you know, Steambox pedigree or whatever, those precursor things that Valve is invested in, not invested in, whatever it is right now.
Those are Linux.
Are Linux based. Yeah. And so I think they're ready. They're ready for that fight, or they're trying their best to be prepared for it.
How funny would it be if Steam wound up being able to drive a move to a different operating system specifically for games that was multi-platform in the extent that ASUS could build a box or Hewlett Packard or whoever wanted to could build a box for it and you could just play games the way it's been working for, you know, a while. We didn't have to like create like these big infrastructures, and yet they had a good system for themselves. I don't know how well it works, because one of the things that is forgotten is that Steam does not exist in a vacuum. You can buy your games through Steam, and it's an awesome proposition, but they still face competition. Like, when you want to go buy BioShock Infinite for your PC, you can get it through Steam, but there are other places you can get it for your PC.
Yeah, like, Amazon's doing a really big push right now with PC downloads.
My point, Christian, it looked like you were like wondering around. My point was that, you know, I think what Xbox One wants to be is, back up a second. I think that what you see out of both these systems, ultimately, especially with like where rights management and all that kind of stuff goes, which we will talk about in a little bit, is they all look over at iTunes and go, wow, those guys really have it made. They own the hardware. They own the ecosystem, and every time anybody sells anything, they get money off of it.
And what I was saying,
it's really hard to circumvent.
I was talking to Christian about this before the show, and Andrew, I think, and I was basically saying, look, iTunes and Steam, the reason that they are so successful is because you go to either of those storefronts, and every day there is tons and tons of stuff on sale that is cheaper than going to the store and buying the retail box product. Now,
I think that would change it, though. So Steam, I see, is still under pressure, because Steam does face Amazon, and it faces traditional brick and mortar, and there are other places to get those games, which iTunes doesn't face those pressures.
Well, no, that's true, but they do have the same sort of like, look, we're not offering physical inventory, we're offering a digital inventory, and really what that's about is driving SKU, or, you know, driving SKU and driving, you know, user base, and you can cut it, you know, developer can come in and say, look, we want to put our game on sale for half off this weekend, and it's a really seamless thing, and it's controlled by the publishers, and, you know, Steam and iTunes get their cuts, obviously. But I think that in a retail console space, you've never seen, like, you go onto PSN or Xbox Live and try to download a full retail title right now, and they are way behind the pricing curve. Like, you know, for digital stuff, like, I'm not buying a box, I'm not buying an instruction manual, I'm not buying a disc, I just want the content, and it's the same price as in a lot of cases, as it would be if I went into GameStop.
And yet people have been buying content that way.
Right, which, you know, again...
Well, I mean, Garner makes a good point, though. If the consumer base continues to purchase that way, the publishers don't see a reason to drop the price. If they're like, well, if people are going to continue to buy it at full price, then why would we make it cheaper?
All right, so we started out talking about the hardware. Let's get back to the hardware before we go too far down the way. Anybody seriously not excited about the proposition of the hardware in the Xbox One?
I am not excited about the fact that Kinect must be connected all of the time and that you cannot turn the microphone off.
Okay.
That bothers me a lot.
So we can talk about Kinect. I think we should talk about Kinect and the controller as well, because I thought the controller had some really spicy features to it as well.
I really like the new controller.
The box? Just out of you know, context, the specifications of the box, maybe slightly under where PlayStation 4 is, but is anyone really like upset, not happy with where the game playing theoretical performance of the Xbox One is?
Purely as a piece of hardware, I think it's competitive. I think that it really will come down to, you know, that extra processing power maybe that the PS4 is going to have, or it could come down to the fact that, you know, a next-gen Kinect built into every system really opens up a lot of unforeseen possibilities for developers, and they end up making some cooler stuff, whereas Kinect 1 was basically a tech demo. We have to make shit that's $20.
As Anand pointed out, you know, someone who's savvy and knows how to use that on-die cache might be able to get theoretically very close performance here. Now, another piece that Microsoft spoke a little bit about that I think hasn't been discussed as much in public, I've seen some people talking about it, so I don't think that I'm thinking people are talking about it, is the use of Xbox Live as a extension of the power of the Xbox One. And this is interesting, because if you saw that one of the things they promoted was, here we were, you know, when we first launched, we had, what was it, 500 servers.
Right.
Then we had, you know, 3,000. Now we have 300,000 servers.
More than all the computational power of 1990-something.
Yeah. And the reason they're doing that is because, you know, Xbox Live obviously figures importantly into their plan here as platform as a service. And it's a big thing potentially for Xbox One. They actually have, you know, part of the proprietary chipsets that they put into the One have to do with how it interfaces with the Live service remotely. So if you can imagine, Gaikai is a working technology now. So we can run a game in the cloud and with a low enough latency let you play it here and see it on your screen being played there. It seems to me that theoretically you could offload a considerable amount of computational work from your console to cloud servers.
Now, as long as you're doing that and using that computational power that you've offloaded for something cool, I'm all behind that. If you're basically going, look, we can make a weaker box, you know, comparatively because we don't need as much power in the box to do that. I mean,
that might have figured into their decision to do it, but I think that weaker here is a level. It's not like they were like,
right.
It's not like we're dropping off from current gen, from next gen to current gen. We're dropping off within the gen a discernible but not monumental amount.
Sure. Right, but if you're going to be offloading a lot of processing power to the cloud, you're also limiting those people who have restricted internet access, right? It goes back to that whole always-on problem.
Well, let's talk about that piece.
You know, like, because if we're going to offload a lot of processing power to the cloud, then you have to have a high-speed broadband. I mean, like, super high-speed connection. I mean, and that goes back to the whole issue that everyone had, like, high-speed is expensive. You have to check in once every 24 hours is the word right now, even though Microsoft hasn't confirmed that. There's, like, conflicting reports all over the place. I mean, I know we're probably going to talk about that later. We're talking about hardware right now, but...
I think this is a core box hardware issue, is this connectivity state thing.
I think that's interesting too. It kind of reminds me of like the N64 days where, you know, like Perfect Dark runs on an N64, but it runs better if you have the added memory card or whatever. So what is, I'm just saying, a game that could look great, like Bungie's done fun stuff. So let's say Destiny on whatever, right? Or pick a game, Halo 6, runs on your Xbox One, looks better with cloud computation. Like, how do they distinguish that if games are using that power? Is it better with Kinect or better with the cloud? Like, what's the branding to let you know?
I don't know.
I don't think they do. I think they just go, holy shit, like, you release it and you're like, Halo's fucking awesome this year. Like, what did they do? There's like a billion more guys and like the levels are super
But then you play it with your crappy internet connection and you don't see that?
Well, I mean,
why am I only fighting one elite?
Or you get lag or glitches or something.
Yeah, if it's one of those games where they're saying they're going to let developers use cloud stuff or require cloud stuff for their titles if they want, some people might have a problem with that. I mean, I don't really know a lot of folks, and I know that they're out there, but just personally, that don't go. I mean, don't have their box online.
But we live in Los Angeles, easy to do that.
That's
number
true.
One, and number two, we're all core gamers, and we're pretty internet connected folks,
mm-hmm. right?
I think that,
but neither are those millions of Call of Duty players and those Halo players and the people that they're really, really like sort of setting their sights
on. I'm not sure. I think it really remains to be seen how I was skeptical of this prior to hearing it, and I really thought the rumor was inaccurate. But look, let's not beat around the bush. Regardless of what the check-in interval might be, they've made a conscientious decision here that the Xbox One is an internet appliance.
Yeah.
It is designed to be connected to the internet in a persistent state.
Well, and if you're paying piecemeal for bandwidth, you're kind of fucked.
It's not going to be pretty.
It's not going
to
be pretty.
Or if you're sharing bandwidth, like if you're a family that has multiple people using the same connection, I mean, that's going to affect that as well. Even if you're paying for high speed, if you have someone streaming video and then someone downloading in another room and then someone playing on their Xbox One in a third room, like that's going to tax your internet connection for sure.
The purely techie, geeky side of me thinks, hey, I think this is cool of them to be forward thinking and be like, oh, this would be, look at all the cool stuff we could do if we were really committed to this. The practical side of me says they're ahead of the curve on this.
They are.
Is that they're way ahead of the curve. And how far ahead of the curve? I mean, I don't know. That, like, that's one of those things that technology futurists always err on. Like, we always think it's going to be longer to get to where we're going to get than it is, right?
Well, we need government subsidized internet infrastructure is what mm-hmm. we need.
And we need the government to take away our guns too. Easy there, Matt.
Yeah, I know.
Let's scale back on this. This is a video game, not C-SPAN. You know what I mean? Okay.
But he brings up a good point in saying it's not just about people in... it's not just about the... getting the access. Yes, we absolutely need to get more areas with access. But once you get the access, it's about making that access affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft
hasn't said what the requirement is. They've kind of done, I think, bad damage control, saying once a day or people have said different things. But I wonder if this is something that they can change. Like, maybe it will come back and maybe you don't need to or something.
I don't
or maybe
think so.
You can call a phone number and like,
Christian,
ching.
I think that I think that...
That's wishful thinking.
I'm trying... Hey, I was on after the PS4 unveil, and people were like, you're too negative. And there's a lot of negative stuff I could say about this. But I'm trying to be positive.
You're being positive
this could
time.
Be cool.
There are positive things, which we will talk about
okay.
later.
I think that if you disregard the mixed messaging that they gave in not answering any of the hard questions, that you look at then at the messaging part. And the messaging part consistently was all of these cool things you can do when you are connected. And so...
Which was your question from a couple of weeks ago, right? Like you and Kanata had that hypothetical, you know, what Kanata was trying to push that. Like what, let's say it is always online.
Yeah.
Like what is cool? I feel like Microsoft's example of what is cool weren't as cool as what you guys were coming up with.
Well, it wasn't.
Spitballing.
I agree. And when we talk about television here, like we'll definitely get into some of what I think are the missteps there. So overall, hardware, solid, same platform as PlayStation 4 as anticipated, which gives a nice uniform base for third-party publishers to make multi-platform title releases, probably be the lowest common denominator, but probably be pretty hot and pretty exciting for at least the foreseeable future until one of them really demonstrates
a
big lead.
And I'm still on the fence of the lowest common denominator, because if you look at the numbers, yes, you're absolutely right. But I remember, I mean, all the whole sell versus, you know,
yep,
and all that. And it's just, it really depends on how developers are able to use that architecture. It's I think they're close enough that you may see.
Or this time it might depend on how engines are able to optimize.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Kinect, always on, and right out of the bat, I mean, one of the big things about this new Kinect is it's a huge technology jump for the Kinect device. Much higher resolution video camera, able to operate in low light conditions thanks to its IR sensing, able to do incredible skeletal stuff and 3D modeling, so it has a great deal of fidelity. I was really glad to watch Adam Sessler talking about it, where he showed, you know, that you can use it up close now.
Yeah, like a meter or something.
You can actually get close to it, so people with small apartments and small spaces, it's going to work just as well as it does for those who
the
are able
to
like...
The joke was, if you can fit the Xbox One in your apartment, Kinect will work.
Kinect will work. It's about damn time.
Yeah.
I still don't like that it's always on. That really, like, and the idea that it's always listening to you constantly. Mm-hmm. We were talking with Alex about this morning, with Alex Albrecht, about how he told us that he was watching the presentation on his Xbox 360 with his Kinect on, and he had to physically unplug the Kinect because it kept recognizing the voice commands from the presentation and messing with the interface while he was watching it. And you got to go. If Microsoft is pushing TV as a big thing to watch through your Xbox One and you can't turn Kinect off, that could be a really big snafu for them.
I see an Always Sunny in Philadelphia where they like just start throwing Kinect off.
Although that voice shit obviously works, right? Because if you're picking up commands from a third party third device that it's not even your vocal stuff, but you're playing something and it's still recognizing, I mean, that's pretty good.
I only use my Kinect right now for vocal commands, unless I'm like playing a Kinect integrated game that I'm, you know, want to use my Kinect for. I never use the hand gestures. I always use vocal commands, which is, I've said on the show before that I really love the vocal commands of the current Kinect. But there's just something, I tweeted about this, there's something creepy about the fact that it can see if your eyes are actually looking at the TV, it can read your heartbeat.
Or their patent reading number of people in a room for licensing restrictions.
I don't like it. It's too big brother for me.
No, it's true. They have a patent where the fear of it is that if you have 10 people, 15 people in your place watching a movie, that they can then charge you more because you're exceeding your...
It's a public display.
Yeah, your usage license for a private display.
No way. I never even thought of that. I don't even want to think that they would do that.
Every time I walk into someone's house that has one of these for a while, I think you are going to see or kids or whatever, you just troll. You walk into your friend's apartment, you just go, Xbox on! And just to see if it turns on. Like, there's stuff, there's just fun stuff. You just walk into someone's house and they're playing Xbox off. Why'd you...
If only you could be like, Xbox, F-disc.
Yes,
that would be awesome. All right, I think that.
Oh wait, am I alone here? Are you guys not bothered?
No,
by this
I think everybody. I think that especially as time goes on, people will think that's a little creepy. I mean, I think about the amount of concern that's been raised over the TSA's backscatter devices and whether or not that's an intrusion of privacy. And I saw some of the 3D modeling that this thing was doing, and I'm like, okay, so it's painting an exact silhouette of a person when I'm not really seeing their clothes on them. Are there people who are going to be upset about this? I'm just asking. Like, there were people who were really, really upset about going to the airport and being inside a TSA scanner and having, like, a holographic projection of their body.
And where does this go? Is it stored anywhere? Is it hackable? Are you able to, like, the UK tabloid scandal?
It's totally hackable.
Where they got voicemails from people or TSA photos from people? I mean, is this going to... Are there going to be unintentional sex tapes coming out of... I'm being serious. Or just, like, uncompromising things where it's on and somehow is in the cloud somewhere.
Oh, it'll definitely reduce the amount of illicit activity that goes on in my living room, that's for sure. I mean,
you just throw a sock over it, you know.
Yeah, just exactly. Somebody's gonna invent a peripheral watch. It'll be like the
and we're joking about
like
it,
the hood.
But it is a bigger issue that we're gonna have to deal with as a society. Like, look, there are already a number of cameras in your house. Hey, like, if you own a MacBook, you've got a camera in that.
If you've got a phone in your pocket, you've got a camera in your pocket.
Right. And especially, like,
you're in the Big Brother house. I mean, there's tons of cameras.
Indeed, there
you're
are.
You're on the real world.
So, you know, here's the first one that is saying, hey, yes, this thing is on all the time. It's on all the time. But you're telling me you've never opened your MacBook or your laptop and looked at that camera and said, is that thing on?
Well, when they say,
yeah, but you can cover that. Like, you can, like, I know lots of people that put, like, a little sticker over the camera on their laptop.
Really?
But there's not, I mean,
that's a little mental.
It's not mental. It's just maybe a little, you know, precaution. But the idea that
it's a little mental.
You can't turn off the microphone is something that I'm kind of perplexed by. Like, why wouldn't I be able to turn that
okay,
off?
Okay, so let's make a clarification. It's not on even when it's off.
Like, no, it is.
Well, not
it's in standby. It's in constant.
You have to be able to turn it off, though. There has to be an unplug the damn console.
Okay.
At some point, there has to be an
off. Well, no. But that's a good question, though, because if they're trying to, like, put a live mic in my living room, regardless of whether or not I'm using their machine.
They are.
I have a problem with that.
That's exactly it. What
that's
it is.
That's exactly what it is.
I have a huge problem with that.
The Xbox One Kinect is microphone is in a constant active state.
Interesting.
When how else there's could it some do, minimal else? Power to the system.
In standby.
Right.
Can I get a job listening to that shit?
See, I mean, I think there's tons of hypothetical, and I've already made a few jokes about, you know, privacy concerns or whatever, but honestly, I don't have a problem with that. Like, yeah, I can make up a million ways that this could be compromising and hypotheticals or whatever, but so much of our data is already out there, and people sure. younger than me are even more and more comfortable with it. Like, I was listening to NPR, and they were doing a big thing about Google Glass, and, like, bars are banning Google Glass preemptively because you can record without people knowing. You could do that for years. Dateline NBC had TV shows about recording people unknowingly. Oh, but you can see my phone's up. No, you can be pretty incognito about recording with the phone.
Yeah, and to your point, the Facebook generation is not going to have a problem with invasion of privacy.
And I think what we're assuming...
And by the way, the Facebook generation is already one generation old.
They're old, yeah.
Yeah, I know. They're the ones that are... I'm talking about kids growing up these days where you're like, why don't post that on your Facebook? Like, you're, like, posting shit that, like... Like old people do, like they post about their colonoscopy or whatever, and you're just like, dude, this is a social forum. Like, people don't.
Yeah, you know, let me clarify my
if
position.
If you're young, don't post scantily clad photos of yourself online, or you're going to end up with some psycho trying to.
Right, out of my colonic, exactly. Here's the pictures.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, exactly.
It's but like, my point is not that you know we should be worried that somebody is like listening in, because let's face it, most of us don't have. Lives that are so exciting that somebody wants to be listening in all the time. But it's the idea that they're building this into something that's going to be sitting in your living room at all times. And
connected to the internet all the time.
Right. And I'm not comfortable without a function where I can turn it off without physically having to unplug the box. I don't think that's a right design move.
I feel like there's going to be a privacy setting or something that you can do. And I think Microsoft will...
And you're going to believe in it. See, that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, airplane mode, I believe in on my phone.
Ignorance is bliss, I guess.
Okay, here, and I'm gonna set the patent right now, so nobody'd make this, but I'm gonna make a rubber grommet that goes over the end of your Kinect, and it basically masks your vocal and camera stuff, so you can just.
But like, do you trust
a Kinect condom?
Yes, yeah. Basically, yes.
A Kinectomom.
A conundom. Whatever.
A Kinectom.
Yes. That name.
It already
to be
starts
determined.
With a sign. You could just call it a condom, you know.
A gaming condom.
You
can never roll it on in time.
No. And don't get the lubricated kind because
it's going to be okay, people. It's going to be okay. Not every corporation is super evil trying to fuck you and try to steal your information. Is it hackable? Will Anonymous maybe do something? I mean, there's potential for all that stuff, but hopefully security will get better and fingerprint scanning, and you won't be sitting in your living room just yelling out your credit card number and your social security number. Like, it's not...
But I will be sitting there going, Xbox porn!
And fantastic, you know what I mean? And if I can have porn going with Skype in a small window, my wife's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, playing a game. Like, that's great. And in this game, everybody wins.
The question is, how quickly will we hit the Joey and Chandler point of being like, okay, enough with the porn already!
Yeah, true. True. Pretty quick, I would bet.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back on the other side, we still have the controller to talk about, and then there's a whole lot of television foo and sports and sports and Call of Duty.
And there's games somewhere coming up, I think.
Maybe.
I hope so.
Don't hope for it.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back.
Want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. And Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like BioShock Infinite, Injustice Gods Among Us, Tomb Raider, and Dead Island Riptide. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want. There are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, you send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. And now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play. It's free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like a game you're playing, all you do is click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's GameFly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, no more horsing around. We're back on the air.
Oh, wait. It was your mustache.
I can't do the pencil mustache with a regular mustache.
That is what we have broken down to.
His real mustache is in the way.
I've just realized that I can't do
Christian has a bit about pencil mustaches.
Yeah, an old one. That's true. And yeah, pedophiles.
There you go.
All right.
All right, so the Xbox One continued. Plenty about the hardware. The controller... I have to say, I kind of want that controller for my Xbox 360 right now.
Yeah, no, it looks really, awesome. Really sleek.
Well, and the stuff that Andrew was saying on Shaq News about the rumble stuff.
Rumble in the rumble trigger. Per trigger, customizable rumble by developers. Okay, so that's really cool. Pretty I really awesome. Like the idea of getting more tactile feedback through my controller.
Well, and can you imagine like the... And you know, in a racing game, the accelerator and actually feeling the tension of the...
There's
of
no
the actual...
resistance. It's just rumble. It doesn't provide feedback. It's not... Yeah.
Well,
so it doesn't make it harder to push. It would just jiggle under your finger.
No, but wouldn't it naturally sort of feel that way if it was if
you
the,
could
if
probably
the
play
trigger was...
You could probably play around with it and ape something by making it vibrate a lot really fast. But what Christian's saying is like you can't. It's not going to make it harder to push on the trigger.
No. But it's going to give you that sensation of like.
There's probably some sensation they can give you.
I don't know.
Is that the first thing competitive gamers turn off?
Rumble?
Trigger rumble. Because I don't know if you'd want to feel that unless it's giving you like insight to like someone being around you or behind you or a car coming up behind you. But I just want, you know, hair triggers all the time or whatever you're doing, right?
Maybe.
And not. Yeah. But I guess competitive gamers can't play it because Evo needs to be completely online now to have all the boxes on the internet. The D-pad looks fantastic, though, back
finally,
to the controller.
Finally, after three promises of this would be the third promise of a fixed D-pad. This is not a dial up, or you can't like rotate it to make it stand up higher. There's no like crazy like special silver version of the controller. It's just like, oh yeah, we now it looks like a normal D-pad and it probably works pretty well. And everyone seemed to like the touch on it, so that's cool. I'm good with all that. So
yeah, I think it looks really good. I've always been a fan of the Xbox controller over the PlayStation controller. I've never really liked the DualShocks, so I'm really jazzed about this new.
You haven't liked the DualShocks?
No, I'm not a fan of. Yeah, I don't like. I don't. The
you know
whole
I'm,
controller
you know I agree,
by itself is much smaller, and I don't like the way that the double shoulder buttons are on the DualShock either. I like the trigger buttons better.
I too feel like I'm contorting my hands more on a DualShock than a.
I'm eager to see what the bulk of the new Sony controller with the added light bar piece in it feels like.
Yep.
So overall, wrap it all up with the Kinect and the new controller and the hardware specs.
Headset question mark? Or is voice chat all just through Kinect now? They didn't show it, right?
They did not show a headset.
I didn't see anything about it.
I don't think they want to. I don't think they want to imply that whole like you're wearing a headset and tie it
gets
tethered.
Away from the.
I mean, I think headsets, third-party headsets, are still going to remain a huge part of the peripheral market, because I actually, even if I'm at home by myself, I prefer to play with my Astros on.
Really?
Because I like the surround sound you get in your headphones than you get, unless you have a really high-end surround sound in your house, which, I mean, some people do, but I, at the moment, I don't, because I'm about to transition and buy myself a new TV someday. Someday, when, you know, when I get, like, you know, some extra money.
The same way, I have a nice pair of Turtle Beaches, and my preferred, I mean, I play with that and crank the volume up, and they're right there on my head.
Yeah, I just like the dynamic sound in a headphone versus hearing it in surround sound in the room.
And anyone that's played, like, Battlefield 3 while their significant other is trying to sleep or something, like, headphones are...
Okay. You know. I mean, I agree. I play with headphones quite a bit too.
I didn't mean to derail. I just think that the Xbox 360 coming with a headset and, like, versus the PS3 not saying you can use whatever you have is Bluetooth. It's super open. I think that was it's part of the reason why the Xbox became the preferred online multiplayer gaming console.
Really?
It's because everybody is able to chat, whether people use it now or not. It was this thing that everybody has it, everyone can chat. And I'm just curious if...
So the implied availability, not necessarily the actual, like, I want to go chat, but the implied availability of everybody gets a chat headset, so of course you're going to chat.
Yeah, and I wonder if Xbox One is taking the Wii U approach where, you know, that's just communication through the controller. They don't have a headset, but that's how you talk.
Right.
Like Monster Hunter, if the Xbox One just uses the Kinect and you're just kind of talking, if it's that, you don't need to yell and you can just sit down and comfortably communicate with squad members.
Yeah, but isn't it going to be difficult to communicate with Kinect? Isn't the Kinect going to be like, oh, you're giving me commands instead of talking to your friends? Isn't that a problem they're maybe going to need to do some planning for?
My Call of Duty name is going to be Xbox Off. Xbox Off, go, oh no!
Just make that your gamer tag.
Yeah, exactly.
And few games have ever gotten savvy about it. I've touched back on this game a number of times, but I really liked the way Manhunt used the combination of, live speakers, like real speakers environment, like you're listening to it, and then a headset, and then the director talking to you separately. So the opportunity to still do stuff like that would be cool. I'm surprised that Xbox
Live
Games
can,
though,
use
that.
With a heartbeat. Like the Kinect. I mean, it says it can read your heartbeat, like, based on your skin and your face, like the pigmentation or whatever. I love the idea of that kind of stuff. Like, Manhunt would pick up your voice, right? If you're like, oh shit. And they'd send guards to you and stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. I didn't mean to derail the...
Derail away.
The thing, but I think it's interesting.
So, how are you guys feeling overall with all those pieces? How are you feeling about the Xbox One hardware now that we wrap it up? Jeff?
I am feeling about the same, maybe slightly more interested than I was... with the PS4, but it's so right now there's nothing to make me to make a decision on which one I'm going to buy, because at the end of the day we all know it's about...
Do you think you're not going to get both?
I mean,
can you afford both?
Depends
on what they cost.
Yeah.
I think it was a universal use. I don't think she was making, like, pointing. Jeff, I saw what you drove in here. Can you afford it?
No, you're right. It was universal.
No, absolutely. I don't know that. I mean, they need to make a case that I need both.
Yeah.
You know, both companies do, and neither one has really said. I mean, I think Sony's done a little bit better on the software side, but E3 is 3 weeks away, so in 3 weeks we'll have a completely different story to tell. I'm on the fence. I mean, I think it was for a piece of hardware, living room peripheral stuff. It's cool.
All right, Christian, how do you feel about it?
Assuming everything works, I'm more inclined. I like the PS4 better, but I'm taking into account the Gaikai part of that being hardware. And what they've shown, assuming it works as advertised, versus what Microsoft has shown with their cloud power. But I'm satisfied with both. I think both look like fantastic gaming pieces of hardware. But at this moment, if I had to pick only one, I'd go with the PS4.
Andrea, what do you think?
Right now, if we're just going purely off hardware, not talking about software.
You don't have to pick. I just want to know what you think about the Xbox One.
Oh, well... Xbox One, I think it looks good from a hardware perspective. I think the design is not so sexy, but that just gives them more opportunities to make a sexier bottle. Yeah.
Look, the box and the name are ridiculous. It's like on both the box and the name, they looked at their past screw-ups and said, you know what, fuck it, why even try?
X-Bone.
There was an interview, one of the Sessler video pieces he did, and I forget who he was interviewing, and he asked him a question. He was being, you know, a good Sessler and asking hard questions, and he said, always on, it's always going to be on, and the guy he was interviewing was like, well, at some power state, it's going to be, you know, it'll power down or have a sleep mode. I mean, come on, you don't want a space heater always on in your apartment. But so the Xbox will, and so I don't know if the guy he was interviewing was making an analogy to, like, you don't always want a big appliance always on, or if he was saying that the Xbox One is hot as fuck when it's always running via space heater.
It's like constantly running and sitting there burning a power.
And it's a water cooler too, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it looks good. Right now, for me, I like it. I would like to buy it.
I would buy from again.
Yes. Basically. No, I have been a very big fan and supporter of the Xbox 360. I use my 360 far, far more than I use my PS3 or my Wii U for that matter. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what they're bringing for their software lineup at E3.
So I think, like I was saying there for a minute, both the name and the hardware design did kind of look like throwing in the towel to me. I was thinking about it, like, they tried with the Xbox to be a little bit, you know, traditional console-y. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of, like, it looks like a game console cues.
But it was black.
It was American, black. Though. It was like a right. H1 roamed the street.
A little hulking, you know. Yeah. And it came out with the Duke controller, all that kind of crap. So then they got to the 360 era, and they're like, okay, we understand now. We're going to do it in white, because Apple does things in white.
First it's, concave piece
of It wasn't
of
really white. It was, like, it was grayish.
Ivory.
Yeah.
Ivory gray or whatever. It's got replaceable faceplates. You'll be able to get faceplates for your favorite games and put those on the front of your machine. You'll love them. That's going to be awesome.
What a big hit those were.
Huge success story there. And then they come out and I think really for them that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back on industrial design, because I think they really thought they were onto something there. I think they've genuinely thought that that was the deal. And then it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so now they've done the Slim, which is fine. And no one's excited about it, and no one's pissed off about it. And they look at it and say, we may not, you know what? Actually, let's just make a box.
It is called a box.
It's called
all.
Xbox anyway. Let's just make a black box and put some piano black plastic on the outside of it, and it's a day.
I really liked the Slim. That's mm-hmm. what I have at home right now, and I like that you can stand it vertically or lay it down if you want. You can't do that with Xbox One. You have to lay that. I mean, that thing does not look like it's going to stand up. Unless I missed something in the demo.
Probably not a stand-up box.
No,
probably
I can't not. Stand up my DVR
it,
either. Though.
It looks to me like the square or the rectangle and hard lines was a intentional design choice for them.
I think so.
Because the Kinect is boxy. What they showed of the dashboard, which who knows if that was real. I don't mean this to troll.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
There weren't ads in the dashboard, so I don't know if that was the real thing. But all of that were squares, and it was full screen, and it was big, and it was in your face.
Yeah, it's part of their Metro design theme that they have throughout all of their Microsoft stuff now.
Yeah, so I think it was intentional, and I think it's a big piece of... There's a lot of stuff in there, and so I think squared hard lines was the design aesthetic they were going for.
So for me, wrapping up the hardware, like the controller, definitely. Yeah. Improved D-pad, intrigued by the idea of per-trigger rumble support.
Awesome.
And yep. And overall, again, they've done very well before with how... I think their controller was already my favorite, and I think that they're really on point there. Impressed by the technical upgrade to Kinect. Really, really impressed. I mean, it went from... It, I think, has taken, in my mind, at least technologically, the step up from toy... to, okay, this is really something interesting that can do something cool with. Right. And by the way, it's going to be offered evidently down the road for PCs as a standalone device.
Yes, it is.
So I'm impressed with that. The hardware, I'm on the fence about. I mean, I'm of two minds. Number one, the update to this generation is big, and both of them are making a big step forward, and I'm cool with that. I am a little surprised that it is the same sort of, like, the exact same architecture, but they decided that they didn't quite want to do the same horsepower as the PlayStation. And that to me, I mean, if you're standing there shopping and you're thinking, well, they're basically the same boxes with a few different, you know, different services and a few different exclusives, and this one's faster and better, well, and they're roughly the same price. All those other propositions better be pretty strong for you, and I'm not sure that they are.
I don't think that people. I mean, I'm just.
You don't think people
from,
shop like that? Maybe not.
Well, yeah, I'm just speaking from my experience and the community of friends that I have that are on Xbox who choose to be on Xbox over PlayStation. They don't choose it because it has higher graphic fidelity than the PlayStation 3. They choose it because they like the first-party games, yeah. And that's where all of their friends are playing.
Hey,
for
like
the most
I said,
part.
Two
I don't
lines.
Know if that's going to make a difference.
I think the Xbox One will be amply powerful enough to be a, you know, on an even playing field with the PlayStation 4 in this generation. So that's fine. So then let's talk about those television stuff, because obviously they want us to talk about television. Television, television, TV, television.
Everyone watches The Price is Right.
First red flag, no DVR? Like, to use your DVR,
That was the first red flag?
For me, yeah.
That's one of many red flags. That wasn't the first one.
For me, that was the first one, because they were like, this is everything. You never need to leave this Xbox.
Oh, but you do.
No one watches live TV anymore. As they showed during the presentation, when they showed live TV, it was...
That's a categorical statement I don't believe you can make. That is not true.
I thought that's not true at all.
I know lots of people, including myself.
Categorically made.
Spicer.
Totally categorically made.
I will take you outside and bitch slap you right now. No, lots
Why
of people.
Take him outside. I will pay $5 to watch that right now.
Lots of people still watch live TV. Lots of people do.
Sure, but it's annoying. I think... So this is the statement I make. People do watch live TV for what I would consider event television, Breaking Bad or shows they get excited about, whatever, right? But to have to learn two different interfaces is, I feel like, what Microsoft is trying to get away from. We've simplified it. You have all of this, and you can just search. You can say Friends, and it will show you what is available to watch Friends episodes. But it can't go in and search the DVR. If you want to go to the DVR, you have to go over to your crappy Comcast thing.
And then you're picking up your remote, and you're defeating the whole purpose of instant switching. Right. I absolutely agree with you that it is kind of asinine that...
Can we hug and make up?
Yes, of course we can. That they made a big deal about this instant switching between your game and live TV, but if you can't access your DVR, it really only works... Or you really would only use that function if you're watching a sporting event. Really. I mean, I can't think of anything else you would watch it for except for maybe like an award show.
What was your first red flag, if that wasn't your first, for this TV stuff?
My first... I guess it wasn't a single red flag, but I was going to say that...
Like a room of exclamation points?
I was going to say that I thought that it was pretty fucking hilarious that on television during their demo was The Price is Right, which is like a 30-year-old television show, because it showed to me, it was like really, you guys are in the frame of mind that would let this be your background show, and it's just showing how off base you are. I mean, I'm so frustrated with them about the television approach that I can't even like put it into words, because I felt like they had this huge opportunity to be on the front edge of where people are going with television. And what they did was went the opposite direction and entrenched with the screwed up old school providers of local television service to your house. And that system just it's indicative of all the broken pieces of big corporate structures that bring you media. And they're embracing it instead of what I wanted. And I can articulate this very clearly now because I thought about it. What I wanted was them to embrace all of what are being termed the over-the-top services, or in other words, ways that you can get video content that aren't through the traditional medium, and pull them all together into one easy-to-use interface so that when I wanted to see the Friends episode with Joey and Chandler having the television set locked on porn, I could easily say, I want to see this. And then it would go out and find it for me and tell me
it's on Amazon. It's on Netflix. It's live right now. It's on your DVR right here. Yeah.
And on top of that, if it wasn't on, then have DVR capability so that when it was
next time,
it could grab it for me next time and then come back and tell me, hey, Garnet, remember last week you wanted to see this episode of Friends? Well, I grabbed it for you. It's spooled up for you on your hard drive. That would have been an awesome television experience. Being able to watch the television that I can watch right now in the exact same way that I can watch it right now, but without as many features, is stupid.
Yes.
I totally agree. And although... If this is a precursor to many years down the road of a la carte programming is one of them, right? So like everybody's always bitching about cable services and how you have to buy these huge packages or whatever. This could be the first step in, you know, if they ink a deal with any number of shows or outlets or smaller than a network of programming, you could basically a la carte your. You know, I don't see that happening anymore.
But this is the ground floor to building something bigger. I feel like no one's wanted to do this fight with cable companies.
Google TV tried to do it. Yeah. Exactly.
Google TV is a great example. And it's always the same shit where it's essentially, and forgive me for not knowing the technical term, but it's like a cable box pass through.
It's an overlay. The tech term is it's an overlay. And by the way, Microsoft did it with web TV years ago, and that was a clusterfuck as well because it's just dumb. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, all this stuff is. If it were a footnote at the end, like, hey, by the way.
Remember Blades?
Like, here's all our cool stuff. Here's the cool games you're going to be able to play or the technology, what technology will allow the games to do on our new machine. And, oh, by the way, like if you're into Skype, if you're into NFL, we got all these really cool extras for you. But it was very obviously not, I mean, the conference, because they focused on all that stuff up front, it was obviously not geared at the person that had been gaming for, you know.
Which is like weird because it was invited game press.
Right. I know.
Well, the person who's watching that event is person who's into Xbox, the gaming console.
Yeah, which is no surprise why they're getting crucified in the press today. I mean, even mainstream outlets are not being kind to this. Like, there are some that are sort of like, oh, it looks exciting and sort of generic speak. But even like, you know, Forbes and the New York Times and like all these non-gaming first publications are like, there's a lot of unanswered questions.
They've seen television overlays before. As a matter of fact, they've just, as Christian brought up, they've recently watched Google TV be completely unsuccessful with this same approach because it doesn't work. The best case scenario right now, and they are doing deals, I think they said they have 41 countries with which they've started working with various television providers so they can do this, is that if you have a modern generation provider's box, whether it be satellite or cable, that has the latest HDMI standard, then they can pass back through the HDMI patch cord the channel change information and volume information.
But so they're pulling it all from...
But they pull everything off of the cable box. And anything more sophisticated than changing the channel or the volume will require you going back to the other device.
So you can't, like, say Xbox pause on your DVR. So, like, if you're watching live, it truly is live.
Or you'll have to use the not so wonderful experience of IR Blaster. And so basically,
which is what we talked about the controller. That's the funniest thing. Like, the controller has a little IR port. That's how it controls the TV stuff, is through traditional IR.
By the way, that's infrared, and infrared blaster is basically what, so Logitech has used this before, where you can program a remote and it learns all of the different infrared commands for your
line of sight,
other devices, and it just like spits them out to them. You might have, if you've ever had like back in the day when you had like a VCR recorder, which is what the Xbox One looks like, by the way, just a joke, but is you had like a little thing that you could put over the IR port of your VCR that would blast the IR codes into your VCR when you were using the controller for your cable box.
Right.
I know that we've
it's
done
not a good solution.
No,
that we've done a lot of like kind of bashing on these TV features, but I want to just kind of for a moment say that there are some of the features that seem kind of cool to me that integrate with that TV feature, particularly the Skype feature. Something that I think a lot of us have been waiting for a long time is, like, we heard Microsoft bought Skype forever ago. We were like, when is Skype coming to, you know, be integrated in a more meaningful way? The first thing I thought of when they brought up that phone call, as hokey as it was, like, oh, hey, thanks for calling into my press conference, buddy, was that I thought, how cool would it be for me to be able to watch a Vikings game on Skype with my dad?
Like, okay.
That would be a
Would you prefer that versus having your dad on an iPad?
Yes, because the TV is...
It's like your eye line.
Yeah, well, it's a much, much larger screen. I don't have to, like, hold up this device all the time. It's integrated, built in. And according to the Snap features, I can pull up my fantasy at the same time as well. Yeah. So my dad and I could literally be talking our fantasy stats together on Skype while we're watching the game together. And the idea of doing that is pretty awesome.
Which is awesome, but has absolutely nothing to do with video games.
You're absolutely right. But you know what was interesting is that I think Microsoft really used this opportunity to say, this is our cool machine. Look at all the other stuff it can do besides playing games. Don't worry, we're going to show you all the games at the gaming convention that's just around the corner.
Yeah.
But look at what we can do outside of just being a gaming machine. Because comes from all in one machine.
That came off as pretty snarky, but I completely agree with you. What they showed was cool. The gamer, the pure gamer in me, as, you know, similarly to PS4, although I think they did a little better job with it, is sort of like, okay, show me what I want to do on this thing.
Absolutely, but as Garnet was saying, if the specs on the two machines are almost identical, what are going to be the differentiating factors between the PS4 and the Xbox One other than first-party titles? So I think that's really where Microsoft was going for and saying, we know that our processing power and the graphic fidelity and everything else is going to be not too far off of what Sony's doing. So we're going to show you some other really cool features that you can do with this to make you maybe want to come to our side instead of going over and buying a PS4.
I think that in the immediate blush of their presentation, they did what Microsoft used to do during their CES press conferences, where at the end of it, it would be the world of tomorrow with Bill Gates. And they would paint this world, and you would be like, holy fuck, that looks really cool. And he's using stuff. Mm-hmm. He's doing it right there on the stage. Right. Oh my God, that's fucking amazing. That's really cool. I want that. And in the moment of watching that conference, you see these things, instant switching, the ability to pull in these sidebars, the ability to like do everything you want to with your television, have it all react instantaneously. And you're like, great. And then I think the disappointment sets in when after the fact you find out, wait, this is the same sort of fragmented technology that's already been out there. You're not doing anything that's new. And as a matter of fact, it has all of these problems that riddled all of these systems beforehand. And what you did was you did a carefully crafted presentation to make it look good on stage. But the reality is that we're not really going to get that. And who knows what the hell people in other countries other than the United States are going to get.
No, yeah, that is a big elephant in the room that I think that not a lot of people are talking about. Some people are talking about the international like rollout with Xbox, because historically PlayStation has always been much friendlier in international territories than Xbox has. So, I mean, everything they talked about, they said, well, this is just for the U.S. market. We aren't really talking about anyone else yet.
Or what fantasy league do you use? I mean, is it going to show generic, like kind of almost Red Zone or DirecTV style, just generic stats, like Adrian Peterson scored a touchdown, or is it just pulling... Is it an ESPN partnership where
well,
not
it looks
playing
like,
through their
it
fantasy?
Looks like they did a big deal with NFL. I mean, the rumored number now is $400 million for 5 years, I think.
So
it was.
Is it NFL Network?
So I would guess it could well be NFL Network, because it does look like they did a big deal with the NFL. And that, the whole NFL thing could be huge, but like you have to use could, because although they had this great conversation, the fireside chat thing, what did they say? We have like... I have no idea. They didn't really say anything.
They said exclusive content. That was it.
There'll be NFL stuff.
Yeah, I heard the $400 million rumor, and I was like, well, my first reaction was, damn, that's a lot of money. Couldn't, like, given the fact that you didn't really show a lot of gaming stuff, like, that's just strikes me as really terrible. Like, couldn't that $400 million have gone into the gaming side of stuff?
That's a good point for
football fans.
That's a lot of freaking money.
Football fans, I believe still right now, you can get Sunday Ticket for your laptop and mobile devices for $100 if you buy the collector's edition of Madden.
That is actually a smoking deal.
So if you're really into football, I think that's the best way to get your football for next year.
It is, because getting Sunday Ticket through DirecTV is really, really expensive.
Yeah, like, same with really PS3.
It's $300.
Yeah. That's a lot of money for a lot of people.
You double real eat it. I'd say it's expensive.
Well, $100 gets you a $60 Madden game and Sunday Ticket on your laptop. That's awesome.
Here's the thing about television, if I wasn't clear about that, is that I think that the promise of what they showed, again, initially was really cool, but the reality is that they can't deliver, and the way they did their system doesn't even really hold the potential to deliver on that, because it's HDMI pass-through, and it's working with all the existing providers, and it's not forward-looking, it's backward-looking. They made this big deal, by the way, for all the bullshit that they ran about... Oh, the 360, we're not 360 backward compatible because the Xbox One is a forward-looking system, which is why we're embracing
last gen.
Which is why we're embracing last-gen television distribution systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good in one way, not the other. And by the way, the other question I brought up, and you guys can throw this out, there were people who were like, oh, now you're just bitching. If this is my all-in-one TV solution, why can I not, where's my digital tuner?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I be able to plug in my antenna? Because especially, and I admit, maybe I'm a bit of a video snob, but the best HDTV signal you can get is the uncompressed digital broadcast transmission that you get in a major metropolitan area. So why can I, and there's channel guide information that goes with that. Mm. You can pull it up. Why do they not have that capability?
I think they probably could
if they incorporated a digital tuner, but they decided not to.
Well, you know, $400 million, that's expensive.
Yeah, well, you think the big focus that they put on TV, that would be something that they would want to push and go, well, you don't need your DVR because you can just use your local, you know, broadcast signal.
Or they could have, like, whatever the other DVR hurdles was, why do they not have a normal antenna input and DVR capability to go with all of that magic, like, here's your television scheduling bullshit.
Did they say where Price is Right footage was coming from when they went to TV? Did they say that, hey, this is a Comcast feed or this is a...
Yeah, they said Comcast.
Yeah, it was local Comcast, yeah.
It's this weird world where cable companies still have a lot of freaking power.
Or perceived power.
Yeah, and I feel like for Microsoft...
And this validates it.
Afraid to say, use OTA signals and cut the cord and we have Netflix and Hulu and, you know, stuff like that.
Readers? Like somebody was talking, brought up card readers on Forbes, I think, and they're like, you know, that's like 600,000 people have those, but it's a way to circumvent the big cable providers that Microsoft could have very easily.
It would have been, again, back to my original thing about television, it would have been really cool to me if this thing had taken all of the over-top services, consolidated them, codified them where I can actually use them and access them really well, rolled that up with a antenna input and a DVR functionality and said, okay, use this as your Xbox One. It's your television access point.
Yeah, agreed.
I totally agree. The optimist in me wants to agree with Mattis where this is them laying the ground floor. They're going to have this, and like in a year or two, they're going to start chipping away at that. They're going to get into your living room, and then they're going to assert themselves. The realist in me, with you, Garnet, I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll take a break. When we come back, we still have I have written down or I have notes with a lot of your opinions on Xbox One, and plus we still have the dog. And that, by the way, the dog was the star of the presentation, right? Definitely. I like how John Davison was like, if anything happens to that dog, you better watch out, Call of Duty. Don't hurt the dog. All right, we'll be right back. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. And now, part two.
Dose.
All right, so one thing I do want to talk about, and this is a good time as any because it's a good time to throw out the disclaimer because we just followed the Gamefly ad there, is that clearly I am an employee of Gamefly who rents games. I have no standing, bearing, or ability whatsoever to comment for or in any way make any statements for Gamefly, and I can't talk about the rental business at all.
If you could.
Well, nope.
We're not playing that game, Spicer.
As counselor, as you would know, can't even go there.
Never
sorry.
Have I ever.
I'm sorry, I can't do it. And if that, you know, if that leaves you to feel like you can't listen to this part, well, that's fine. That's your prerogative. I've spoken at many times at great length about used games, and I feel like I have something to say about it. Among other things, during the 90s, I worked for Electronics Boutique, who are now part of GameStop, and we're big into the used games. And I have a lot of insight from having been through regional managing there and having a really good insight into how the used game business works from the insides of that operation and how the retail side of things worked from that operation. And there's a lot of concern over the cloud of licensing that's hanging over how games might work on the Xbox One. And by the way, although we're lightning rodding it around the Xbox One, don't think for a moment that Sony's not going to do something.
Exactly.
The rumor had been out there already, so it might not be the same thing. And Microsoft may have intentionally or unintentionally walked themselves into being the first person out to really get in the firing line on this. But the subject's been coming.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, at this point, there are no... There's no pricing information out there. There's nothing that
says... There's no hard facts at all.
Yeah, it's all... And yes, you can sort of speculate based on what companies tend to do, but really, at the end of the day, there are some possible, you know, bright paths, I guess, that aren't quite as dark about...
Well, you're optimistic.
I think you're right. I think the eventuality is that disc-based content is going to disappear. Period.
One day.
Not for a while. Brick and mortar is still way too strong for that, I think.
I don't want to download a 40 gig Uncharted.
But for right now, one of the things that was being hinted at...
Google Fiber.
Yeah.
In at least one of the interviews that Phil Harrison did, he made great pains to point out that the disc had the bits on it. The bits. Apparently, there's no bytes. It's just in bits.
Just bits.
Well, basically, what he was conveying was this idea that the disc is just a mechanism to get you the files. And then once you have the files, then you can authorize your persona on your Xbox or wherever you might take it on the cloud to enjoy that entertainment content, but no one else can. And that's fine. It's this idea of...
Well, they can pay.
They can pay.
They didn't say how much to pay.
And you can always... Well, actually, in another interview, he indicated that it would be the same amount.
It looked like full price.
It would be full price. And look, this is something that the publishers for a long time have been saying that, you know, we are facing this terrible demon of used game sales. Used game sales are taking all the money out of our pocket that we ought to be making. They're robbing us of first-party sales. We are getting screwed by this.
Which is really, I don't think, is the case. And I hope you do read this comment from this NeoGAF post that you have in the show notes here, because I think that...
That's where I was...
It has a lot of really good things.
But you guys remember Napster, right? And the whole Metallica thing that, you know, started off that...
I brought it up this morning in the bonus round. Yeah. It's the same wrong-mindedness. It's this old media... For as much as it sounds trite to say there are people out of touch sitting in ivory towers running corporations, doing these, making these decisions, oftentimes the evidence says that. Yeah. And you're like, wait, like, how long has, even now, the music industry is so slow to try and adapt. And all that fighting piracy, and piracy is a little bit differently used, but it's similar, like, the world changed and they didn't adapt situation. All that fighting it did was lose them a lot of money, lose them a tremendous amount of customer love and loyalty, and push people into doing ever more illicit things. So
people who
would have been willing to buy things became ever more casual pirates because the music industry wasn't giving them a good conduit to become a good paying customer.
I think this applies to more than just media. I mean, I think it applies, you look at changes in political or governance in countries, and I think that once something has power, it's scary for that thing to do something that could see it losing power. And then
that's
when
something really
rises to power, there's this fear. Like when iTunes first came out, you know, Steve Jobs had this revolutionary idea. Napster was corroding sales. And he says, like, hey, 99 cents every song. And all the publishers signed on to that. And they're like, this is great. You're going to save us. You're going to save the music industry. And then iTunes and became such a powerful thing, the music industry started clawing back, saying, no, 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 we need variable pricing. You're making too much money off us. We're providing the content. And there's this fight, which is why rumored iRadio hasn't launched, is that they're afraid of Apple having all this power. Or when Netflix first became streaming, everyone's like, oh my God, this is amazing. We make money off you. You're not charging as much as syndication rights. And now people are clawing after Netflix.
Or worse yet, look what happened. Actually, Netflix is a great example, because when Netflix was first coming up, the studios were almost oblivious. They're like, oh, you're going to do that? Fine. Here's a deal.
Right. Super cheap.
Here's a deal for super cheap, whatever. And then Netflix gets successful and they come back. And instead of saying, oh, this is working, let's make money and do a good deal, they go just the opposite direction and go, oh, you need to pay us a shit ton of money.
And we're going to start Crackle with Sony's thing. Everybody wants their own thing and this. And so I feel like where we are with disc-based media or these video game publishers is that everyone's so afraid because they do have this power right now that I think it takes a kind of crazy boss of a company to be like, you know what? F it. Here's the risk. We're gonna gamble on this. And if that doesn't work out, you're out of there as a boss. But if it works out 10 years later, you know, you're Steve Jobs and you're this brilliant mind. But it's scary.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, what's going to happen is the community of gamers and consumers need to vote with their dollars, essentially, and say, this is what we want. This is the way we feel about it. I mean, because in this rant that we see here, it's like, this is the way a lot of people feel, that gamers are like, being a gamer is expensive. It's really expensive. And used games are a way for gamers to experience a lot of different IPs without spending literally thousands of dollars every year to do so. And for someone like Microsoft to come in and say, well, we're going to put shackles on that, that's really worriesome to a lot of people.
So I'll speak to used games. Let's start off here, which is a couple of comments from a thread on NeoGAF. And this thread actually coalesced around the catalyst of Ben Kuchera's post on Penny Arcade about why these limits were a good thing. And I'll leave you guys to make your decisions about that how you will. Hardcastle McCormick on NeoGAF had this to say. The industry aimed too high, suddenly started ballooning budgets, and then went, oh God, there aren't any sales here to cover it up. And then, time and time again, the consumers are expected to show up at the door every time these developers come out with some new way to make the package look worse. Now, it's a bit cynical, but you can easily see how that applies. Look at recent history. Why was there an army of 2-3? Really, why was there an army of two? Why did we just hear the announcement of a yet another Need for Speed? There's a Need for Speed coming this fall on the Frostbite 3 engine, and I don't know why it exists. There have been countless Need for Speeds. Mm. They've had two awesome Need for Speeds done by Criterion. There are a number of racing games coming out this fall. Here is going to become Need for Speed Redundancy.
Well, because the people that are at that level, the people that are making the decisions about what gets made are looking at, you know, the last decade of profits and going, oh yeah, well,
exactly.
We make at least 8 million or 800, you know, whatever
they
it is.
They want to approach it as a formula.
Yeah, let's make another one. It's not how you would approach art or any other sort
its
of
game
like,
will be X. Yeah. We will apply marketing formula Y, and the yield will be Z.
Yeah.
And then when it doesn't work out, it's like, oh, you know what? Used games caused that, because obviously that's where the problem was in
no,
the used games.
The problem has to do with the fact that $60. Looking at a price tag of $60 means nothing in terms of the experience you're getting.
Now, if you want the real rant,
for $15 you can get Gunslinger, Call of War.
That
Gunslinger.
Is true, which I would recommend doing.
Barai articulated at great length, which I've condensed some, but Barai, like, you really should go find Barai's post, because he put into words, I think, a lot of the emotional effect of these decisions. Here's the problem. Tomb Raider sold 3.4 million units in the space of a month, and it's a failure because it will fail to recoup its budget. Does this sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
We've had this conversation. 3.4 million fucking units, and I think he meant dollars, for what is essentially a B-tier franchise, and that's still not enough to make money. Squeenix acted like Tomb Raider, a franchise that habitually sells less than 3 million lifetime per entry. I wanted to fat check that, but I didn't have a chance, but Tomb Raider has been very successful. It was very successful originally. Mm-hmm. It had some ups and downs, but that doesn't sound completely incorrect. Was going to suddenly sell Call of Duty numbers just because they spent $100 million on it. But no, it's Used Games that did this. Used Games made Capcom make some horrible design decisions on DMC and piss off the entire fan base. Used Games made Activision and EA flood the market with guitar games and accessories long after people stopped caring. Used Games made Microsoft make a fourth Gears of War game that nobody asked for from a developer that nobody cares about. Used Games made Sony pump out another God of War game after they spent the past few years flooding the market with HD remasters. Used Games also made Sony make a Smash Brothers clone with no appealing characters to help sell it. Used Games made Bizarre Creations make James Bond and racing games no one wanted. Used Games made publishers shutter studios the moment the game they were working on goes gold, before they've even had a chance to sell a single new copy, let alone a used one. That right there is the censure. You know, yeah. And he says I could go on, and you could write a book about every single executive level screw up this gen, and yet these same people with their $1 million salaries and their shill puppets still try to insult our intelligence and blame Used Games and awful entitled consumers for companies shutting and talented people losing their jobs.
Yeah.
I agree. It's totally Used Games' fault.
Well, it's the parallel between that and Studio Hollywood is becoming more and more, like, you know, easy to make. Right. The, you know, big studios are like, they're not looking at the artistic property that you are creating. They're looking at history, demographics, you know, how much we can sell this thing, what opening weekend we're going to have, like where we're going to, you know, advertise, all that sort of stuff. And very little of that has anything to do with what anybody who consumes entertainment media gives any care at all about. It's is the art good? And unfortunately, as a business, the bigger you get, the more people at the top you have that aren't looking at those things as.
And so then they try to make sure that they ring, you know, because the proposition has now been, I need to wring every dollar out of this project that I can. I've got to wring every drop out of it because I've only put in enough to make sure I can wring every drop out.
Which is why you end up with such a homogenous, like, all games these days outside of the indie space are homogenous. They can be compared directly for the most part to other games of their ilk, other games of their genre. There isn't really, if you look at the innovation and creativity in terms of mechanics and gameplay and all that sort of stuff, it's there occasionally, and when it's there, it's a huge deal because it's got a big spotlight on it.
Who said, by the way, who said making art wasn't risky?
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, why does a publisher think that just because they make 10 titles this month or this year, that all 10 titles of them should yield whatever percent.
Right.
They looked at their account and they said, the accountant said, well, you know, if you yield 17% profit across all 10 titles this year, we'll make this much money. It's, you can't do that. You're not making widgets.
No, yeah, it needs to be set up more like the film industry. I know you were saying that they're getting similar, but the way the film industry works is that a studio like Paramount has one big ticket item for the year, right? They have like their Star Trek, where they're like, okay, we're going to put this big movie out and it's going to make us $500 million and that's going to fund all of our other movies, our rom-coms, you know, our buddy comedies, our horror movies for the rest of the year so we can keep releasing films. But they're not going to sell, you know, this many tickets the way the big blockbuster franchise is going to. And I almost, like, I don't know, like, enough about the back end of the business, and Garnet, you can probably speak more to this than I can, about how the business side of publishing works, but I would hope that they kind of have that same mentality in going, our big AAA franchise is going to carry all of the little guys so that we can continue making some of these really cool projects.
Most of them compartmentalize each project, where every project has to be financially sustainable in and of itself, which is a model that actually does to some degree make sense. But like my overarching point that I wanted to make is that there are a number of creators out there and creative people and studios who get screwed out of this proposition, and publishers telling them that they're getting screwed by used games is ridiculous.
So,
because the publisher, like, the whole point of having a publisher is that you're a studio and the publisher comes along and funds your creative idea. And at the very least, you as the creative idea person, you've sold this idea and the publisher has bought into it. And at that point, you as a studio should be making money based off of creating that game for the publisher, who has now decided that I'm going to take the risk on this property as the person with the money. You bring the creative talent, I'm bringing the money, together we will try and make this successful. And I am paying you to make this creation. And if we're successful together, then I'm going to take a big portion of the over-the-top profits once you've earned out. It's almost like book contracts. Like the studio has to earn out their advances, and once they've earned out their advances, then they'll make money.
Yeah, you pay back your investor first, and then
So why on earth does all of this come back to the consumer?
Well, because that's where the money comes from.
But it's not your responsibility, game player, to be making all these people money. Like no matter what used game it is, I can't buy a used game the day a game comes out. And there's a whole number of people who don't. By the way, there's a whole number of people who don't want to buy used games, who just don't like the idea of it.
But that's right. So to devil advocate this whole topic right now, answering that specific question, one, the difference in used media, digital media, disc-based media, is that it doesn't deteriorate. Some people might not want a used copy of Tomb Raider because someone else has opened the case and a manual is missing or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's totally different than someone not wanting to buy a 2004 Ford F-150 because it has 70,000 miles on it and has been through the paces.
Yeah. I agree.
And to some extent, maybe, and I know this rant is somewhat sarcastic.
You're still getting the same thing.
You're still getting exactly the same thing.
I think you need to compare it media to media, not media to other products. Think about the used music market, right? Like that's completely like, I haven't heard any music recording labels coming forward and demonizing the resale of CDs and vinyl and things that have been used.
It's a different cost here.
Well, of course it is, and that's why it's that much more important, is because the cost of a game is $60 here in the U.S. In some other countries, it's $80, $90, $100, which makes it even that much more difficult to buy brand new, which is why the used game market is so important to so many people around the world.
Other media has other – and I agree with what you guys are saying, but I think this other side is important. Other media has other ways of earning back its capital. So music, sometimes through, you know, the publisher or RCA, or I don't know if they're still in business, whatever it is, they'll make money even when the artist is on tour because they're signed to that. So there's other ways that people are buying into that. And games have kind of gotten into that with merchandising, like plushies or shirts.
But has not gotten sophisticated. Mm-hmm.
Not the same. In movies, so Star Trek comes out and it's a tent pole, the summer tent pole for Paramount, I believe. And it comes out, and then it's going to make money on DVD sales, on video on demand rentals, and its own quote unquote. It's referred to as the secondary market. Games
are a secondary market for it,
right? And and games don't have that. The game comes out, and then that's the game. And what they've tried to do, they've tried to create a secondary market of complete editions or game of the year editions, where they get to recapitalize on a game that's already been made by repackaging assets that have been created. But I think the games market is unique in that Tomb Raider comes out. And like you said, Andrew, that's a great point. They're trying to find other income streams with DLC or season passes. But to a large extent, the game comes out and that's it. And movies, music, pretty much all other media, like a lot of software before, there were other ways to capitalize on it. And with games as a software, it's difficult. And Jeff, you mentioned, you know, it's hard to see innovation in games aside from in the indie space. And I think that's true. But the plus of that is the indie space is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're one of the biggest champions on it. Almost every iOS game you've recommended that I've played, I've loved. They've been fantastic. We have Cart Life, Papers, Please, all these great games that are out. In the SNES day, I mean, things were derivative, too. I mean, DuckTales is a great game. I guess that's NES. But it's a platformer.
Right.
Everything in Bonk was great, but it's a platformer. Mortal Kombat was a fighter. Like, you had derivative styles of games, and you didn't have blowing up indie space to go get the other things. And people complain about wanting a middle tier pricing structure. Blood Dragon, $15, great game, yeah. 8 to 10 hours. Jeff, you and I are both playing.
Yeah.
Gunslinger is fantastic from what I've played, $15. And so there are a lot of problems, and I definitely agree with all of them, but I think that we kind of sometimes need to champion our industry for the stuff that they're trying to do or the world we're living in right now.
Well, you've got – yeah, and I totally agree with you. I think that stems from the fact that you've got artists that are trying to make, you know, something that they really believe in, or that they – you know, they're trying to say something, and you've got people that are, you know, in addition to the artists, trying to make money off of whatever it is they're trying to say. And – when it comes down to a business proposition, we're giving you X number of dollars. We want those back. So it's really – it's unfortunate that there isn't more of a philanthropic vein running through the game mainstream games industry, in the sense that, you know, there don't seem to be a lot of big top-level guys in the industry that can go, look, I have the clout to greenlight this. I know it's not the next Halo. I know it's not a sure bet. Yeah, I might be staking my job on it, but I think this is an important game to make. And you don't see a lot of those people that are guiding this whole new
landscape. And as was pointed out by Hardcastle McCormick, everybody got caught up in this, I have to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I can't make a mid-level game.
Where's
and
the ceiling? Like, what? When
my point, really, of this is that I think that used games are not the problem. However, the problem is that we need a way the developers consistently are able that a good development studio can be created and assemble a talented team and make good quality creative product and not be at the mercy of a system that's broken or of a publisher that makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And a publisher needs to have a realistic expectation. A publisher needs to realize that the reason that they are a publisher and not the developer is that they stand to net the biggest profit when a game hits, because they are the one taking the risk, and that they are the one taking the risk. And that taking the risk, and that's why, you know what? Hey, you know what? THQ made some horrible blunders and paid the price.
Yeah.
And a lot of publishers right now are paying the price for making blunders. At the same time, when they are successful, they will also reap the rewards, as Activision Blizzard has in, you know, numerous financial reports.
I just wish that success was not defined in such narrow terms about you have to, I mean, you know, the whole Tomb Raider, you know, they spent so much money and they sold so many units and it's still not considered successful because the people that were in charge of greenlighting it and financing it and whatever,
and the weird,
didn't have realistic expectations.
Well, and the relationship there between Square Enix and Crystal was that there was a constant push, like, really, how much did it take to develop the multiplayer for that? How much did it take to develop the continuing DLC
saying that they weren't even going to have multiplayer up through like halfway or more through development. And then it was like sort of at the end, they were like, oh, yeah, we decided to add multiplayer.
Because they needed a DLC option. I think one of the solutions maybe, or a possibility to kind of counteract this used game dilemma, is for them to employ a windowing strategy similar to what movies do.
Okay.
When a movie comes out, a blockbuster movie, it's in the theater for X amount of weeks, and then it has a windowing time frame before it comes to Netflix, before it comes to DVD or Blu-ray release, where you can't get it unless you have paid to see it in the theater.
Okay.
And I think that if we kind of apply a similar strategy to games, where you can only buy the game brand new for X amount of period of time, and
it's
then
interesting.
After that period of time, you get to buy it used or purchase it for a discounted price because it's past, you know, this, I mean, you know, whatever arbitrary period of time, whether it's 2 months or 3 months.
So your activation code locked for a month. How would you feel? That's an interesting question. I'll just throw that out to you. How would you feel, consumer, if you bought a game and for it was this process that we suspect it may be, that you get the game and there's an activation code that comes with it, and then that game is then tied to your account. And within the first 30 or 60 days past the official release date, that code is indelibly tied. But after which, it may be released from you, at which point in time you no longer have the rights to play it, but it may be released by you so that it can go into a secondhand market.
I would be okay with that, and I think a lot of people, when they think about it, would be, in large part because, and I wish I could remember where I heard the stat, but they were saying, somebody was saying
it's interesting.
Recently that 70% of the dollars you know, that people get from selling used games go into new game purchases.
Okay, so you want to decide, this is a couple of things I can talk about as far as my experience back at Electronics Boutique. Go
one,
ahead.
Andrea, and just hearing this for the first time, this is something we talked about during a break. I think that's a fantastic idea. I think someone can pick this apart and, like, in the forums that will point out holes in it. But hearing it just now, yes, there are compromises. As a consumer, you'd like more freedom. It's mine. I can do whatever I want with it. But in terms of, like, creating a secondary market or something, and yeah, I don't know. I think that's pretty fantastic.
I hadn't really thought of it, and it sounds pretty cool. I mean, I think, yeah. Wow, you know, you make a really great game. You want to play it when it comes out, then pay the – I went to the IMAX and watched it in IMAX 3D.
Even digital rentals are tiered now. So if you go on PSN, they're like, okay, this movie just hit digital. It's $15. You can buy it digital, but you have to wait another couple weeks to rent it or whatever.
And the structure needs to change.
It's great. Yeah.
The overall structure needs to change. Look, publishers need to stop pulling the carpet out from underneath releases so damn quickly. When they don't –
And I think this can do that.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Because after this 30-day window or whatever it is under Andrea's proposal, then they can –
I would guess it'd be longer
price.
Than that. Sure. It'd probably be closer to 60 days would be my
but
guess.
But whatever it is. Then they can slash the price of new copies, and then used copies are $5 less.
It's an interesting plan. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting plan because right now what happens is sometimes as quickly as a week or two, the carpet's pulled out from underneath the game. The price is like put on fire sale. The studio is then told, you're not getting any money because we had to fire sale this.
Well, and the
game which screws the studio.
And the games
completely.
that are really great hold that price point too, right?
Yep.
Like you look at it even now in today's used game market, new games that sell really well, try and buy used, you're paying like $5 less than sticker. Anyway.
Well, I mean, it's the same with movies though, and which you know the model would be based off. If a movie like look at Avengers, how long was that in theaters for? It was in theaters for almost 2 months because it kept.
Yep.
Selling tickets week after week after week. And so the distributors were like, keep it in, keep it in. And some movies disappear from the theaters after 2 or 3 weeks. And I think the same model applies. If people are still buying brand new units, then the windowing period gets longer, right? Like if the popularity for a certain title is big, then you extend it. But if it's short, if the response is tepid or lukewarm, then you shorten it up and make it more available at a cheaper price sooner.
Send your checks to @AndreaRenee on Twitter. Before we move on to like this next, I'm going back to like the sales expectations. What I think is interesting, and forgive me if it's been talked about on this show before, how dumb are these executives?
Or
how? Because I feel like we all know, like Capcom is
they're not dumb.
The Lichman for me, there are sales expectations.
They approach it from a different direction. That's
a wrong one. Like
they
no
approach
one,
it from a different direction.
You ask a gamer like. So Capcom says they're going to sell this many Resident Evil 6s, and we were all like, yeah, right. But like, how do they believe that? Or who convinces Square Enix, like these projected numbers for Tomb Raider? Like, we all hear the numbers like, that's fantastic. That's the best any Tomb Raider's ever sold. Like, what magician is over there like, and 10 million. And they're like, yay.
David Copperfield.
He's good.
Yeah. Tomb Raider, you know, Lara Croft, the Angelina Jolie thing.
But
like,
you know,
that's
but
what they,
seriously,
that's what they
like, how can we all know this, but the presidents of these companies
because
don't.
We are not. I mean, unfortunately, for whatever reason, they don't have to know that stuff to be in the positions that they're in.
That's fucked up.
Like, for whatever reason, like because it's not democratically elected position, I don't know.
Isn't this also just sort of pointing back to, like, why Apple was good with Jobs there? Because Jobs had the bullshit detector.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and as anti-games as he was, he was very, very good at that.
Like, which is why UI changes that people were pushing for while he was still there, he was like, no. Apple TV, no. Right. He was clear about, like, here's what we do, here's how it works, here's why it works.
Well, because you got the sense that even if you didn't agree with everything he was doing, he is a visionary. Like, he actually believes in, it's not about, I believe that I need to make, like, $10 billion more dollars. It's, I believe that this device is actually going to have some practical use and make people's lives better or whatever. Anyway.
So I think that I think that anything that solves that is good. The used business is not the demon. The used business drives pre-orders. It drives a lot of the new release business inside the small enthusiast shops, whether they be mom and pops or a chain. And it's a totally different – the person who buys a used copy of a new game a couple of 3 weeks after it comes out is not the person who buys it at retail. It's not the same person. It's not a lost sale. It's not a one-to-one.
No, you're actually getting an audience member that you probably would not have had they paid.
And guess what? They buy your hardware.
Yep.
And once they have your hardware, they're in the system. And now that they're in the system, while they may not have bought Gran Turismo 6 new because they were like, you know, Gran Turismo, I hear it's good. Oh, I'll pick it up used. They might well buy Last of Us new because now you've got them into the system. But if there's not that other space there for them, then they're not in the store because they can't even afford to go to the store.
Right.
And it's just like the whole thing just becomes this like rolling downhill problem.
Totally agree.
Yep. All right. I still have a bunch of opinions from folks on Shaq News about the Xbox One launch. I kind of didn't want to make it just an Xbox One show. So maybe when we come back, we'll just read some of them and then we'll like move on to other stuff.
You want to talk about Metro Last Light?
We've talked about Metro Last Light. I mean, you're late to the party.
Well, I wasn't
LTTP.
I wasn't here last week, okay?
Whose problem is that?
Yours.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we'll talk about a little Gunslinger, though. That'd be
good. Gunslinger!
Yeah, a little Call of Juarez.
Call of Juarez. Call of Juarez.
Totally surprised me, man.
It's fantastic. All right, stick around. We can confirm. We'll be right back to wrap her up. A little tribute there for...
Yes, rest in peace, Rayman.
Let's pour one out.
The late, great Rayman, who passed away in Europe from cancer. I had written down, but I did not note exactly where. But anyway, it was sad. Yep. The Doors, a legendary great that I feel like in classic rock has sort of become a little forgotten while others still hold the banners.
Nobody does an organ solo like The Doors, let me tell you.
All right, and they got their start just up the beach from here, because we are here in the beautiful Atlantis Group Studios. Thank you very much to these guys who do the awesome recording work and engineering work for us on Weekend Confirmed, and are available if you're a game studio to do voiceover work. Because they're awesome, and I would have no problem whatsoever endorsing them. They are pretty freaking fantastic.
And they have a really
fantastic.
Great... Ms. Pac-Man machine.
They have a great.
I'm desperately trying to get the high score on.
So look, if you're doing game VO and you need to do it, not only do you get like a fantastic Santa Monica location, but you get M&Ms, you get pretzels, and Ms. Pac-Man, which is, I mean, that's pretty much the whole deal right there. And there's a shitty place for sushi right down the street that has cheap beer,
but in
it's
the best,
not
yeah,
shitty.
It is shitty
in the best way though.
But it's like...
Well, it doesn't make you sick, but it's not very good.
Yes, exactly.
But the beer is cheap.
But we keep going there every single week.
Because the beer is cheap. All right, so to give you guys your voice, some of the Xbox One response from you guys on Shaq News. Z Mansfield said, all that connectivity and seamless transition stuff was awesome. And as a big fantasy football and basketball player, this integration between live TV and fantasy content really piqued my interest. However, the lack of games was disappointing. Fair enough. Going Commando 117 said the UI stuff was spectacular. Cartman 013 said, I couldn't give two shites about The Price is Right. I don't give a flying fuck about the NFL, NBA, and my fucking fantasy NBA team. I couldn't care less about switching from cable TV to a game by a bizarre hand gesture, especially when I can press one button. In fact, I am about to cancel my cable subscription altogether, which, by the way, is a statistic that is growing at an alarming rate, according to cable companies. I can watch Halo on YouTube, and it is only if I am really fucking bored. What else? I can Skype on my phone and every other device in my house already. EA can go take a shit. And whatever that confusing game was with the ship and the bridge and the girl and her mom, well, I think I'll pass on that too.
P.S. Fuck you hippies.
I started next-gen gaming with the PS1 back in 1995, and it looks like I'll be going full circle 19 years later. That or reinvest in my PC for my gaming fix, which is looking all the more inviting. Oh, I feel better now. Do you?
I feel like I passed something.
Dave Petro 72 added this. To me, it looks cool, or at least sounds interesting. The potential and, like usual, the ideas and concepts are greater than the end product probably will be. For me, living in Canada, though, so far, both systems and especially the XB1 are not an option for me. I don't know enough about the bandwidth or internet limits in the US, but up here, we're limited to our speeds and, in many cases, our data and gigabyte usage. These limits will, in fact, limit me and almost everyone I know to the extent that we won't be able to utilize fully many of these console features. In addition to that, we can't use any exclusive or available US-based cable features, so I'm stuck and frustrated. PC gaming at the forefront at the moment.
I think that one's particularly pertinent when you think that a 2 gigabyte DLC download takes anywhere from 5 to 30 minutes to download. Think about a game. If you have to install every single game on your hard drive.
And again, super spoiled. I mean, look, we live in Los Angeles, California, where as far as American infrastructure goes, we're pretty well off. I have the Time Warner cable package that gives me like 30 gig down.
Yeah, do you have the turbo edition?
Yeah, it's like the double turbo whatever, which is actually bullshit.
It's totally bullshit, but I had to get it.
It's like two bonded 15 gig channels, but it's fine because the bonded channels at least mean that like someone can be watching a video over like Netflix or whatever, and you can download it at reasonable speed.
My biggest problem right now is that at any given moment with two other roommates, I have probably 12 devices that are all trying to connect to the internet at the same time. Which
you include your phones and the DVR.
Everything. It's like nuts.
And then finally, Final Spartan said this. Wow, so delusional. Xbox will sell more day one. It's marketed to the mass market, not just for gamers. It has exclusives to the best-selling game of all time, Call of Duty, and it's going to be better on the new Xbox. People here are disconnected with reality and obviously not the mass market Xbox is targeting or Call of Duty fans, as the majority of gamers are. Good luck saying it's the year of the PlayStation for the 8th straight year and not even coming close to Xbox.
I mean, I know people don't want to admit that he's right, but I think he's right. I mean,
I think he makes a point.
Yes.
It's to be seen whether he's right. But what they did trot out was the NFL, Call of Duty, and a bunch of television, all of which are super, like, those are cleanup hitters.
Well, in the United States, 100%. Absolutely. Like, those are just facts. And gamers want to be like, well, you know, it's the gamers that built, you know, Xbox as a company. They're abandoning their base. And I don't think they're abandoning their base. I think they're saying, hey, we want more and more people who aren't just hardcore gamers to buy our system.
It's not abandoning, but look. The Xbox One is a bold pivot. It remains to be seen whether it'll be successful, but it does pivot strongly. Microsoft entered into the gaming space as a wild card team at Microsoft that was allowed to go do their thing, despite the fact that no one thought they were going to be successful. It's like, okay, you guys can go do your thing, make your Xbox, whatever. And now it's pivoting back into the mothership, so to say. And it is, in doing that, going for these things that Final Spartan just pointed out, like back to these big heavy hitter pieces, and maybe to a degree less true to the gaming core that was what actually got it to be successful in the first place.
Is it enough of a feature set to appeal to the mainstream or the mass market, as Final Spartan was saying, as a DVD player on the PlayStation 2? Is it, because I feel like that's the kind of thing it needs to get in that conversation.
Is it as much to beat a smart television?
Right. And like, will it get on...
You're going to be able to Skype on your... Like, I think Oprah there are already televisions you could spy... There are televisions you can Skype on
right
now.
Yeah, but the processing power of smart TVs is not good. I've used a lot of smart TVs. The processing speed are terrible.
And that's...
So,
but they won't
I think
be,
that's
they
what
won't be
these
in 2 years.
Systems have over that.
In 2 years, they'll be fine for what you want to do with it.
But I just mean, like, will this get, like, my mom or dad or not my non-gamer friends interested enough to go spend... $300 to $500.
And if it does, why do you want them to buy an Xbox One anyway? Because, like, what's the point of getting them to buy an Xbox One so that they can not play games on the thing that
so
is
you
cool
can Skype with them?
It does all this other stuff, but it could play games that you don't play games, so who cares? Buy one.
Not me getting them to, but them being interested in buying one. Like, I knew friends that bought a PS2 for the DVD player because it was a cheap DVD player that worked well. And then some of them got in gaming, some of them didn't, but it helped Sony
different
make
price
money.
Proposition.
Well, I mean, but yeah, you, right. I think that you are overemphasizing, you know, the gaming aspect. Not to say that these aren't video game consoles, because clearly they are, but both Sony and Microsoft are pushing them as more as entertainment devices. My dad came to me a year ago and said, hey, kiddo, I want to buy a console. The guy that got me into video games way back when he bought an NES, he's like, what's better? Should I get a 360 or should I get a PS3? And I said, well, Dad, since you're not playing as many games, but I know that you're a huge movie fan and you love buying movies, you should get the PS3 because it has the Blu-ray player. That was my pitch to him. And he bought a PS3 because I was the one who was like, you should get it for this reason. So I don't want to, I don't think you guys should downplay how important that other entertainment aspect is to the general consumer.
I'm not downplaying. I'm trying to question if it's the if it has the same weight as that. If that mm-hmm. you'd have that same conversation, you'd be like, well, Dad, this is the one that lets you have fantasy. And I think for a lot of people it would be, and I think, you know, we'll see. I don't have an answer, but I think it's a question that it's more nebulous if these functions are as desirable as things in the past. Right? We knew VHS was being phased out for DVD. Mm-hmm. Blu-ray was still a little more nebulous. We didn't know if it would – it hasn't become, you know, as big as DVD. And will these other services become that big thing that everybody wants?
I just want some damn game information.
Games, yes, we want games.
I mean, you know, like I'm excited about both as theoretical pieces of hardware that will do theoretically.
Well,
do
you
cool
saw
stuff.
Games, Jeff. Didn't you see them? There was the EA sizzle reel. Oh, there was the Call of Duty sizzle reel.
By the way, the
sizzle reel.
The Call of Duty thing. You know, whether,
oh, dogs.
Whether or not
dogs.
You're impressed.
Oh, dogs.
But Call of Duty was, it's not even, that's not even an exclusive to the Xbox One, and yet they spent like a quarter of their presentation on pimping that game. I'm like,
because that game is a gigantic seller for Xbox, and their exclusive DLC deal is a really big moneymaker for them. And I don't want to discount that, because okay, let me back up just a second there. Call of Duty, everyone knows it's huge. It sells a lot. It's more popular on Xbox than on any other platform. The numbers show that. Is it going to be this revolutionary game? Let's face it, it's probably not going to be, which is disappointing. But it's still going
Wait,
to be...
Wait, why are you so skeptic? New engine? It's a whole new world, Andrea. Like, the world is dead as you knew it. America has changed. These are different warriors.
I'm disappointed because I got to interview some developers at an Activision event, and I was not impressed by what they had to say to me. And I, like a lot of other people, are skeptical of this franchise that has been around for a long time. And I'm okay if they came out and said, hey, we don't want to fix what's not broken. I would be okay with that, but when you come out, when your CEO comes out and says, we want to push this thing forward, we really want to take it to the next level and really make it something that you've never seen before, when you're setting the stage like that, you better fucking bring it. And but, I don't think that they're bringing it.
No, make no mistake. Call of Duty is basically, you know, Madden to a certain degree, right? It's iterative improvements every year, and it's got its huge, dedicated, hardcore fan base, some of which only play that and maybe two or three other things in a year.
Look, they reasserted themselves
as
mass
market.
They reasserted themselves as the Call of Duty box. They said, hey, by the way, if you're a Call of Duty fan, we will have Call of Duty. It's going to look amazing. And if you are playing online where the DLC matters, mm-hmm. we will have the DLC first. Period.
Yeah. Now, as disappointed,
drop the mic.
As disappointed as I am about like the lack of general game info and stuff, I totally get their strategy. Given that E3 is like 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, I'm actually curious as to what new Sony is going to bring to the table at E3 that they haven't talked about yet.
I'm sure that Sony will have new games.
Yeah, I'm sure they will too.
Sony, this is Sony's to steal. Like right now,
Sony gets to show the box at E3. It was so smart. They like gave hardware details, but they didn't show the box. But, so now they can show the box, and then they can turn around and say, "And here's games you didn't know we were bringing."
Or they go, "Oh, we have the social stuff too."
Yeah,
like here's our box, and they basically do the reverse of what Microsoft is doing, which is here's the box, social features. E3 comes along, here's the games. Sony did, okay, here's the general presentation about what we're going to do and some game stuff. And then E3 comes around and goes, here's the hardware, here's the...
Well, I think they'll still show games.
I think they will, too.
I think they'll have some games.
They have to.
But is the focus
going to
be...
Yeah, they must.
Is the focus going to be more... Because Sony has a lot more to talk about in terms of, you know, revealing stuff about the actual system itself.
My impression is that, and this is... not based on any knowledge whatsoever, but with Mark Cerny being brought out at the helm, I just sort of have this confidence that like they get it and they will know that E3 is gamer time and that they will once again that they'll show the hardware and they'll capitalize on having the gamer audience, and then they'll show the four games they showed already, and they'll show a couple three more, and they'll be like, yeah, we have, and then they'll be like, yeah, there's UI stuff and there's all these other pieces, we'll talk about this later, but right now we wanted to show you the PlayStation 4 hardware and how fucking awesome it is.
And maybe it's the optimist in me, but I think E3 could be a, like, it could completely change this conversation around both systems. Like once the software is brought and it's like, look.
It's definitely going to say something in this conversation.
It will. I don't know if it'll, I mean, like I said.
Where do you put Nintendo in this?
Boom, 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 boom.
That bad.
Yeah.
No.
Even with Smash Brothers and Zelda and Mario Kart and.
I'm already looking down the barrel of at least one more, you know, $300 to $500 game system. I could see myself picking up a Wii U once those exclusives that they're talking about.
What if they drop the price?
No, I mean,
okay. I don't think that will happen.
I don't think it'll happen either. I'm just throwing it out there as a hypothetical. For
me, it's about, okay, fine. Release a new Zelda. Release a new Metroid game. Give me some new IPs. Give me some stuff that I'm like, dude, I want to buy this system.
So you're not interested in you don't really care about a new Smash Brothers? I'm just saying, like, I mean, give me a new IP. And
their base does 100%, though.
Their base, the core base is thrilled to see a new Smash Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they're thrilled about Pokemon X and Y on 3DS, and I think that's something a lot of people aren't talking about in this next-gen conversation, is how Nintendo, I think, could really sweep up and be like, look at all this really cool integration we're doing with the 3DS and the Wii U, and I really am thinking that Sony is going to hopefully bring some of that to the table with Vita and PS4 at their conference, and really kind of compete in that space, which is something a lot of people aren't really talking about.
Well, then you've got Xbox guys, the smart glass stuff, which I'm sure and the tablet-based stuff. Everybody's going to have a handheld.
The one thing that Microsoft has been smart about is that they have been platform agnostic with their off-the-screen stuff. They have not been shy about saying, yeah, okay, you know what, we'll do an iOS version of smart glass.
Right.
Like, there's some features that we'll reserve for Windows Mobile. But yeah, we'll do an Android version. We'll do an iOS version. We want you to have that off-the-screen experience.
I'm not saying it makes it better, but for people that are clamoring to see games for the Xbox One, you've seen quite a few. You've seen Watch Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen...
Which is also a current-gen game.
Right. But I mean, with the demo they show running, every multi-platform game that they've shown, that they've released as PlayStation 4... I mean, as soon as the Xbox One was announced, you started seeing the flood of those press releases coming to, you know, your email inbox.
Battlefield 4, it's on both.
It's on both.
Assassin's Creed 4.
It's on both.
Destiny's on both.
I would bet you so much money right now that there will be multiple versions of GTA 5 as well.
Oh, I mean, it would be silly for them not to. I mean, the new Bethesda titles, they're anticipating being announced for Xbox One as well, you know, like Wolfenstein and things like that.
So that was the smart thing that Microsoft did as like the feather, you know, the tickle tease, because I think they're acknowledging, hey, you've seen these games, we're going to get them too, that we get Call of Duty exclusives, we have this partnership with EA that's still kind of undefined but is going to be something cool to be excited about. And then they said the other thing is the tease for E3, 15 exclusives, 8 original IPs. Like, that's, I think, what, I don't think they did it, but that's what they were trying to do to gamers, like, guys, we get it, we know you. You've seen this stuff, but we're getting it too. It's going to be awesome.
But no one trusts them.
And exactly.
No one trusts them. No one hears that and thinks anything beyond oh, so you're going to give me a couple of core games and a whole bunch of downloadable and or Kinect family games.
Sure, because that's the pessimistic world we live in that I certainly feed into.
But they said eight new IPs.
It's what they've done before.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so are they going to count things like National Geographic and Disney?
Oh, geez, I sure hope not. But I mean, let's just...
But that's what they would... But those are new IP pieces.
Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about what is the game that will make you buy Xbox One? Like, what is it?
What's the game that'll make you buy any of these?
Uncharted 4. God of War 4.
Have those been announced?
No, but I'm saying those are the games. Well, Sony gave me a hatful of money right before I did this podcast, so that's part of it. But the other part of it is...
It's attractive. I like it.
Thank you.
It looks sort of like a toupee.
I hope it was a 10-gallon hat.
Like, I'm excited about those Sony exclusives, but Microsoft has always done well with the 360 is third-party and exclusive DLCs and things like that. For Microsoft exclusives, Gears, which isn't under contract anymore with them, but if they can pull... I wouldn't put it past them to pull off the next that.
Well, that original team is gone.
Sure. The Crytek game is an exclusive. That could be exciting. Whatever it ends
well, that
up being.
First demo of Rise was not promising. If they come back, hopefully they'll show something better. But when they showed it was all about like battling with your Kinect, and I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. Yeah,
they Kinect walked away from that.
I think if you look track record wise, if you look at Microsoft, they sort of throw darts at making creative properties and never really settle into like, oh, this is what we're going after. You know, there was the year that they went to the Tokyo Game Show and debuted like, look at all these cool games that we're going to like work with Japanese developers to make. And then they're like, and that sort of slowly frittered away. And then those games came out and no one cared because they didn't really back them up. They like did it as a stunt. And then when it didn't register, they're like, okay, we'll move on. And they've done some Kinect stuff, and then they've moved on. Whereas you sort of feel like what happens after this first wave? Do you have more confidence that 2 years, 3 years, 4 years from now, Microsoft will still be backing a bunch of Xbox One studios making content for it, or Sony making for the PS4?
And
maybe neither.
So many unknowns right now, like in terms of how support's going to work. I did hear there's just been all this talk about the no self-publishing on Xbox One is a big ruffle for indies. And I definitely appreciate the disdain there. I still like, though, personally, I mean, if you're an indie and you're going to make something fresh and new, make PC or iOS your lead platform, because you can go other directions from there. And I think if you put all your eggs in the console basket, you know,
you better be getting some console money to do.
Yeah, you're really beholden to the publishers, and it's great. Like if you do your thing, and a publisher and Sony or Microsoft comes along and goes, "Hey, look, we'd like to put your game up." Great, you know. But
there's some potentially interesting horizons on how PlayStation Network could build the good faith that they've sort of started here. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of interesting ideas that could go on there, but I don't know how much is actually going to develop around it. And I think you're right. Like right now, like PC, you own your own world.
I mean,
iOS, you still do to a degree.
The one good thing about the new dashboard that they said that about indie stuff is that because they're no longer fragmenting the game base, they're basically like the stuff that they do promote on there, you'll get AAA stuff will have screen real estate comparable to the next big indie developed thing that they are promoting. Now, whether or not that content's the best indie content to promote or whatever, that's all a whole different argument. But I would hope
they would curate it.
I like the fact. I mean, unless you're going to go the Steam Greenlight route, there's really no good way. I mean, Xbox Live Indie Games Channel, as great of an idea as it was, ended up being this giant cesspool of shit with a couple of decent things in there that were good and like, you know. But I mean, for the most part, it was like it took far more effort to navigate that landscape than you know. You want to find fun stuff right away. You don't want to be like spending 3 hours looking for.
All right, we've talked about nothing else other than Xbox One. and if I don't salvage anything else out of this show in the last 5 minutes, I'm going to salvage Call of Juarez.
Call of Juarez.
Gunslinger,
yeah.
Available on PC, Xbox Live Arcade, and PSN.
So I think we're about the same amount of time into it, right?
Like, yeah, episode three, chapter three, whatever.
Did either of you play The Cartel?
No. God. No.
No.
Okay.
I think it's universally accepted that that game is terrible.
So did Call of Juarez return to the Western roots, or is it modern day?
Call of, well, do you want...
Give me
go
the
ahead.
Setup.
No, go ahead.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
So the setup is basically a... It's this dude. You play this guy who's like this old gunslinger, and the whole thing is told in flashback form. So you enter a town at the beginning. There's little animated cutscenes, and you're basically recounting all of these, you know, Wild West battles that you had. That
you walk into a bar and you get a drink, and then you sit down. And you have fans there, basically, yeah. And this kid's like, "Oh, I read the Dime novel about you. You did the shootout with Billy the Kid and 84 people." It's like, well, that's not exactly how it was. And then you go back and do it. And it's genius, I think.
Yeah.
One, it's linear, but there's not monster closets like Call of Duty, like where people infinitely spawn.
But it is a shooting gallery.
But it is a shooting gallery. Yep. It's linear, but it's also $15 and whatever. But it's fun. I think the story probably doesn't hold up, but there are fun moments in it where he's recounting this and he's like one minor... It's not even a story spoiler. He's like, and then out of nowhere, just like the way the Apache fight, they're falling out of the sky and they're getting leverage on me and shooting down from above. And someone's like, wait... You were killing Apache? I thought you... He's like, did I say Apache? I meant cowboys that fought like the Apache. And then you're back in the game and it flashes back and all the Apache characters that you're fighting are now cowboys.
So it does a couple of things like that where you'll be narratively...
Like misremembers.
Yeah, you'll like go through and somebody in the will
call them out.
And it'll actually rewind like while you're in-game and like you'll go back and be like, well, this is how it really happened.
Yeah, so I heard you killed him in the first draw. Is that what you heard? And then you'll do that. Well, that's not what happened. And then he like, gets like bitch slapped or something. And you're like, it's cool.
That's kind of cool.
The thing, though, I mean, all that's neat and really well done and stuff. The thing that makes this worth your $15 is the shooting mechanics are.
They're great.
They're really good. It is very shooting gallery, but the weapons all have this weight to them, and they all fire very well.
And they're old West weapons.
And they're fun to use.
Real six-shooter dialing.
So it is back to the old day.
Yeah.
Back to the Wild West.
And when you shoot, you know, when you shoot somebody, they do this. I mean, they have like a bullet time thing or whatever that you can use when you're powered up. But you can just generally shooting guys, you shoot somebody, and it does this really cool when the bullet impacts – it slows down a little bit and you see this big blood plume and then it goes back into the action. So you're like, you know,
there's an arcade mode, but even single player, you can link headshots to build up things. And it's a really fun shooting gallery, not quite the same extent that Bulletstorm was, but it plays on that.
It reminds me very much. And the reason I think I love it so much is because it reminds me of Outlaws, which was the LucasArts first person Western.
Totally remember that.
I mean, there's no multiplayer in this, but it is very much that, like, heavy guns. You feel like you're – I mean, you know, you're not going to get an Academy Award-winning story or anything, but it's just fun.
For a $15 LARC, would you go Blood Dragon or would you go Gunslinger?
I would go either one depending on which subject matter appealed to you the most. I have an admitted soft spot for Western stuff. I mean, they have a quick draw mechanic that's really cool, and like, you know, it's.
I would say Far Cry 3, and then Gunslinger. get the real Far Cry 3.
Oh, the real Far Cry.
Fair enough.
And if you're just talking about the expansion,
and by the way, if you have PlayStation Plus right now, you can get Sleeping Dogs for free. Sleeping Dogs is free on PlayStation Plus,
which
right
is, which
now.
Is great.
That's the free game on PlayStation Plus for this month. So.
Xbox Gold gave me free games like Sleeping Dogs. Just
you know, they didn't talk much about the Xbox Live Gold proposition.
Or what's behind a paywall? Is this fantasy stuff behind paywall?
I didn't become a PlayStation Plus subscriber until I was unemployed, though. I will let you know that. And it's actually been.
And then you're like, cool. Then you're like, shit, like, this is a good proposition.
Yeah, there's a couple games that I get for free this month. Sure.
Real quick on Gunslinger, it's Techland developed, they've done all the Call of War, but they've also done Dead Island.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say what you want about the problems of that game. Very competent developer. And I believe it's running a modified Cry 3 engine. So the graphics are pretty. And it's semi-cell shaded, so it's like a mixture of like Borderlands in real life, where the characters aren't cartoony looking, but it has like a thin cell shading or toon layer on top of
it.
And great varied environment, especially for a Western. It's definitely worth checking out.
I mean, yeah, it's basically making your way through a bunch of really awesome Western set pieces and getting to shoot
as told through flashback stories.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Micah, take us to Finishing Moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Mr. Indie Jeff Mattis.
Hello, everyone. My finishing move, actually, I've been a couple things. I completely, since I was last on the show, I completely replayed.
Number one.
Yes, number one. Completely replayed Grand Theft Auto 4 and both the expansions on PC.
Which I totally want to talk to you about.
Yes, we will have a longer conversation about that. But in the finishing move section, I just want to say that playing both of those through, and unemployment's great for certain things, is really interesting because what Rockstar managed to do, what Rockstar North managed to do with this narrative that spans three games, I don't think I've ever seen a trilogy like that that actually weaves the narrative through all three games as well. Now, if you're going to go, you know, playing it on PC is definitely has its advantages.
Held up or didn't held up?
I actually enjoyed it more this time, knowing what the little complaints would be.
Awesome.
Knowing that when my cousin would call, I could just answer it and say, yeah, I'm coming, and then call him right back and go, no, I'm not coming, and it wouldn't have any effect on my gameplay. Little things like that. Yes, it's not a perfect system, but there is a lot of really good content in there, particularly in Lost in the Damned and The Ballad of Gay Tony. Really, really good storytelling, really interesting characters, and some unique, you know, mini game based content that feels like it could stand on its own. Anyway, really cool. Also, I just want to give a shout out to Paper Titans, which I've been playing on iOS, which is doesn't strike me as being particularly difficult. If you ever played Blast Away, it's sort of like that. But the art style is this really, really beautiful papercraft thing where you're actually, you know, every time you unlock a new dude, you get to fold him up and turn him into. Yeah, it's got some really cool touchscreen stuff and really beautiful. I don't know if it's still on sale, but it was on sale for a buck recently. So anyhow.
Christian Spicer.
Two quick promos and one shame on you. Jeff Cannata has mentioned it. May 30th is Double Jump live at the Nerd Melt showroom in Los Angeles. Yeah, the website is nerdmeltla.com. We're filming four episodes live for the Nerdist channel. We have Ted Price. You might know him from Insomniac, Randy Pitchford, Gearbox, Adam Sessler's coming back, and more surprises lined up. It's going to be super fun. Come out and see that.
Nerd Melt Showroom, May 30th.
That is correct.
Spicer.
Thursday, 8 p.m. If you're in town for
Kanata.
E3, Thursday, June 13th is the last of the Thursday of E3, is our improv versus stand-up at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Los Angeles. If you're here and you want to go to that, it'll be super fun. It's one improv team and some amazing stand-ups this month. It's J.C. Coakley and Jonah Ray, and Rajan Darney and I host it and created that show. And the shame on you moment is to EA and Microsoft's press conference where they come out and say, we have this great new engine, and then they show pre-rendered footage using in-game assets. Microsoft, you learned from Elijah Wood era that you can't come out and say, here's Madden on the Xbox, and then you show this trailer that you still haven't lived up to. I think it's complete crap that EA shows off and touts a new engine and then shows essentially Batman Origins pre-rendered cutscene for all intents and purposes, and they say that was all engine assets, but bullshit. Until I see it really running, yes, bullshot. Shame on you, EA.
Hey, remember Diablo 3?
Yeah,
it's a year old.
It is
a year old, and Blizzard celebrated with a crazy infographic to sort of toot their horn on a number of successes. There weren't really, I didn't see anything in there on the real money auction house. I was looking for that.
Imagine that.
Didn't see any information on that. Weird. But they do have some very big numbers to boast about. On their biggest day, they had 5.8 million players playing Diablo 3, which is pretty awesome. They still are averaging 2.1 million players per day. So despite being somewhat maligned and having a rather rocky launch, Diablo 3 has turned into a strong, if not legendary at this point, title. It has seemed to have stabilized quite a bit. I mean, they've patched in a number of things that they had promised. They've stabilized a number of things, although the auction house thing and the disaster that has wrought may never be completely reconciled.
Well, and I got to be honest, one of those players is playing with my account, or was playing with my account, going through the get your account unhacked process.
Really?
Is ridiculous.
That's a bummer.
Like, to the point where I may just eat the fact that I can't play those games anymore because I'm not sending Social Security photocopies.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, no
way. That's ridiculous. Hundreds and thousands of millions of characters have been created. As a matter of fact, 183,962 characters are created per day on average. A third of them clear the game on normal, which is pretty cool. Mm. And Demon Hunter holding a thin lead as the most popular character, although Barbarian is most popular in hardcore, obviously for survivability.
So that makes sense.
If you're still playing Diablo 3, you're probably still finding plenty of people to play with, and for what it's worth, Blizzard continues to provide robust support for. They're really trying to obviously put a lot of work into it. Now, you could say they're grinding their gears, but they're putting a lot of work into it. And there's still a PS3 version around the corner. So there you go, Diablo 3, a year old.
That's the part that gets me.
A year old. And SimCity just released SimCity Patch 4. Now, granted, you may wonder what happened to the 2-point series and the 3-point series. They did 2 and then they went to 4. We're not really sure, but now they have 4.
Well, 2 is the finally playable patch.
Two is the all that shit that should have been right when we launched. We're about ready to launch the game now. It's like final beta. 4 is maybe like release version.
Like actual extra stuff, like a couple little things. I think
they added a new region.
All right. I might have to fire that up again. Maybe.
Andrea, you can bring it home.
Yes. I also have two things.
Number one,
please subscribe to my show on The Escapist on YouTube. It's youtube.com/The Escapist Magazine. I have a daily show there, Escapist News Now. So I would really appreciate that. And we're doing a bunch of awesome giveaways for subscribers there with GameStop gift cards and such. So would appreciate that. Second thing, I'm trying to put together a little piece about female protagonists in Call of Duty. If you follow me on Twitter, you may have seen me already tweet about this. I would love to hear your guys' opinions about how you would feel if there was a female protagonist or if there was a female option in multiplayer. If you want to tweet me your opinions or email me at AndreaRenee@AndreaRenee.com or hit me up on Facebook or wherever, I would really love to hear from you guys about what you think about that so I can put this piece together. And that's all I have to say.
All right, everybody, thanks. Awesome show. It was pretty exciting to have the Xbox One out there. So now we've got Xbox One, we've got PlayStation 4, we know Nintendo is bringing games. Everything is lined up for this to be a huge E3, and we can confirm we'll be excited to have lots of discussions about it.
Because, you know, video games.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. And the Atlantis group here in Santa Monica taking good care of us on the recording. Dave in there, of course, doing all of the production for us. He's already got our E3 show plans in the works. Right, Dave? he's like, yeah. By the way, also heard back from Dennis Dyack, so you never know. Oh. Dennis and some of those folks may be joining us to talk about their Kickstarted game. What else do I know? Oh, and John Davison coming up on a show near cool. you. I think he's coming down to, by the way, Christian, check out Double Jump.
Yes.
So
yes.
That very Thursday, we may record prior to that with John Davison here. And all that and more. So hope you enjoyed the show. Please come over to Shack News. We will talk about the new consoles. We'll talk about E3. Tell us what you want us to talk about because we've only got about 3 weeks until E3. There's a ton of stuff we could cover. I'd like to cover what you guys would be interested in and include you in the show. Thanks very much for listening. That is your Weekend Confirmed, and we're Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Bring a pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.